Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 2nd, 2015. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, that's questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. See our banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, we're going to start off. We're going to look into God's Word tonight. We're going to look at Matthew over in the Sermon on the Mount, and we're going to read Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 48. Again, that's Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 48. Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow or turn of thee, turn not away, thou away. Ye have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you to love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father, which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as the Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. Matthew 5, verses 38 through 48. Okay, let's see. Tonight's topic, we're going to look at sovereign, and we're going to look at summary proceedings. Now, we filed two papers in the past 2 weeks. I know we sent out sovereign, I believe the beginning of last week, and then we sent out another paper. Goodness, I think it was paper number 10. I don't remember. Maybe Gary can
Summary. Let us know. Summary judgment.
Summary judgment just went out now, right?
Yeah, right now it's in progress.
Right, and that's to the sheriffs, correct?
Yes.
Yes, both of them going to the sheriffs, but I think in between that, didn't we do something to the courts, number 10 or 11? I think it was 10.
We did a letter to judges.
Okay. Yes, we did. Yes. So there was in between. So the three papers that actually went out. We have not read, I don't believe, sovereign, and it's one page. And we haven't read summary proceedings. We just wrote that and sent that out. That's one page also.
Summary proceedings is really good.
So we'll start off with sovereign. Robert, if you could mute your mic out there. Okay, this is Constitutional Law 101, Sovereign. What is a sovereign? To all county sheriffs and all U.S. marshals, from we the people, carbon copied all federal and state elected and appointed servants. Reference, your duty to know and enforce the law. In the United States, sovereignty resides in people. The Congress cannot invoke the sovereign power of the people to override their will, as thus declared. Perry versus U.S. Confirmatio cauterarum, sovereign people shall not be taken or imprisoned or diseased or outlawed, or exiled, or anywise destroyed, but by a lawful judgment of his peers, or by the law of the land. Magna Carta, chapter 39. High treason, Black's Law 4th, treason against the king or sovereign. It will be admitted on all hands that with the exception of the powers granted to the states and the federal government through the Constitution, the people of the several states are unconditionally sovereign within their respective states. Lansing versus Smith. The doctrine of sovereignty, of sovereign immunity, is one of the common law immunities and defenses that are available to the sovereign. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and the source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is defined, and limitations of power. Yickwo versus Hopkins. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. Lansing versus Smith. Sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes the law, and foreign courts cannot condemn influences persuading sovereigns to make the decree. Fire Insurance Company of Moscow, Russia versus Bank of New York and Trust Company. The state cannot diminish rights of the people. Horatio versus the people of the state of California. Well, maybe that's Hurtado. How would you pronounce that? To presume that a sovereign forever waives the right to exercise one of its powers unless it expressly reserves the right to exercise that power in a commercial agreement turns the concept of sovereignty on its head. Marion versus Jacalera. It is the public policy of this state that public agencies exist to act in the conduct of the people's business. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereign of the country, but they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. Chris Holm versus Georgia. Conclusion. When one of we, the people, is accused by law enforcement agents of being a terrorist because they acknowledge that they are a sovereign, that law enforcement officer engages in high treason. When a judicial officer incarcerates one of we, the people, because they are sovereign, that would be subversion against we, the people, of the United States of America. Our founding fathers were sovereign. So are we, and so are you. Any elected or appointed servant who targets liberty-minded people because they are sovereign is a tyrant. They are the real terrorist, and they are the ones who should be arrested for terrorism. People who claim to be sovereign and assault or kill police officers are criminals and murderers. We are not aware of any sovereign group in America that are terrorists. It is a fabrication by the enemies of liberty that are destroying our courts and our republican form of government. For more information, visit powerofthecountysheriff.com. And this was memo number 004. It was a one-page memo. Went out to all sheriffs and marshals and every elected official in the state and federal level. Got a copy of this via fax. Okay, the next paper is Constitutional Law 101, Summary Proceedings. What are summary proceedings? To all county sheriffs and all U.S. marshals, from we the people, to all federal, carbon copied, all federal, state, elected, and appointed servants. Reference, it is your duty to know and enforce the law. Many court decisions are made by judges. These are called summary proceedings. These are unconstitutional. Most people in jail are there without a trial by jury, that is to say, without due process. People are losing their homes, life, savings, and
we lost you, John.
How about now? Testing 1, 2. Coming
we
through
hear you now?
Yes. Okay. had a little problem earlier today. I had when I came on first, I had to reboot again. All right, yeah, let me know if I disappear again. Let me see where I was at. People are losing their homes, life savings, and other property without due process. Courts serve corporations and the bar, not the people. Sheriffs and marshals are derelict of their duty because of ignorance of their duty. Many educated, sometimes frustrated, misguided people are imprisoned for contempt of court and labeled as sovereign citizens, also known as terrorists, a ploy of the controlling powers to destroy the sovereignty of we the people, all because we the people challenge unconstitutional court practices. Unfortunately, our elected constitutional officers, also known as sheriffs and marshals, are ignorant of the Constitution, also known as the law of the land, and thereby participate in these crimes when they jail the people. If we are going to save the Constitution for the United States of America, it is imperative that sheriffs, marshals, and the people educate themselves. Summary proceedings, Black's Fourth. Any proceeding by which controversy is settled, case disposed of, or trial conducted in a prompt and simple manner without the aid of a jury, without indictment, or in other respects out of the regular course of the common law. In procedure, proceedings are said to be summary when they are short and simple in comparison with regular proceedings. Phillips versus Phillips. Constitutions must be construed to reference the common law. Summary proceedings are null and void. As to the construction with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction is that the Constitution must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement of nuisance, that is, pains, by summary proceedings, and it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. Even though there is no common law in the United States in a sense of a national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England adopted in the several states, interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. 16, American Jurisprudence, Second Edition, Section 114. Due course of law. This phrase is synonymous with due process of law, or law of the land, and means law in its regular course of an administration through courts of justice. Kansas versus Dunmire. Property seizures require, first, a trial by jury with sworn affidavits from an injured party, not summary proceedings. Second, a warrant with a wet ink signature of a judge, not a stamp or clerk's signature. Third, a sworn affidavit by an injured party and or witness to a crime. Without these three steps, property cannot be legally seized. And when the sheriff or marshal executes a warrant without all of the aforementioned prerequisites, the sheriff or the marshal becomes liable and a conspirator in a crime. Fifth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States provides no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. A similar provision exists in all the state constitutions. The phrase due course of law and the law of the land are sometimes used, but all three of these phrases have the same meaning, and that applies conformity with the ancient and customary laws of the English people or laws indicated by Parliament. Davidson versus New Orleans. No man shall be deprived of his property without being heard in his own defense. Kinley versus Beverly. Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secured in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by an oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized. The question is, will you obey the law, or will you obey lawless men, i.e., save America or lose her to tyrants? For more information, visit powerofthecountysheriff.com, memo number 005. Okay, so that's our fifth memo to the sheriff. And, of course, the one before was number 4. And, you know, we've been really working at this to make sure that we educate these sheriffs. At some point, they're going to have to step up and, you know, to bat and do what has to be done. We've got a lot of papers going out this week. We sent a couple of papers out this week, next week, shall I say. No, actually, this week coming on. We did send, one or two habeas corpuses this past week, and I think we got a few coming up. I'm not sure how many. I think 3 or 4, as a matter of fact, coming up, going out this week. We've got quite a few habeas corpuses backlogged, but we're pushing as fast as we can to get them going. But a lot of the information we're lacking. A lot of the reasons why some of these habeas corpuses aren't going out is because a lot of people seem to think maybe that we have everything, and we don't. So we have contacted, I believe, most of the people. I don't remember. I think there's 149 cases we have backlogged. And I believe, and I'll be corrected if I'm wrong on this, but I believe we've contacted all or most of those people to let them know what it is that they're lacking, or at least we are in the process of doing that. And I'll have to get a little more information on that to figure out which one is the truth there. But in any event, we're moving as fast as we can on these things. I think we're making headway here. We have been putting them under pressure, and we're going to start to put them under a lot more pressure. We're ready to move to the next steps on these papers, which we're not going to talk too much about right now, but we will be talking about them as we move forward. We have 3 procedures that go through for a habeas corpus. First is the petition for the habeas corpus, and then the approval or the actual habeas corpus itself that goes forth out to all of the people that are involved in a court case outside their jurisdiction and ultimately are breaking the law, and they have to cease. And also they have to restore the person to their state of being at the beginning of this case, whenever that started. Second part of the procedure that needed to be done, and we've been doing it now, is the filing of the default. And that filing of the default, we get a stamped copy of 1-page default that is returned to us, a stamped filing date and time. And of course, there is what's called a affidavit of default, which is done by either the petitioner or the next friend who is petitioned on behalf of the petitioner, who actually is the person either incarcerated or whatever problems they have. The next step after that, if they don't respond, and we have been reaching this step, and I think we're getting some response, positive response. When I say positive response, I mean that they're getting a little nervous, they're starting to pay attention, and they're starting to talk about what they think they should do. This has been what we have seen with a couple of habeas corpus we had done a while ago and were successful with, and at least to some degree with one, and fully with another. But, it takes a while for these people to digest. They ignore us, that's nothing, and then they finally get around to reading it. Then they get upset. I know the lawyers on one case particularly recently just now are reading it, and they've already defaulted, I think a month ago or 3 weeks ago. They defaulted. And yet now they're reading it, okay? They're reading it to ascertain whether this has any authority or not. And so the next step comes out is we find them in contempt of court with opportunity to amend. And that's the step we're at right now. We are sending papers out, contempt of court, with opportunity to amend. And all they have to do is just obey the law, and that will amend their contempt. The next step, I'm not going to talk about. I think we'll be executing that next week, maybe, in some cases, and then we'll talk about it. Then there's another step after that. There's always another step. But anyway, we'll be talking about that as we go forward with these different steps. I got one question that actually has been sitting on my paper here a couple of weeks, and I just bypassed it, but someone had asked, I don't think I've asked this question, I don't believe that it is necessary for a judge to swear in a grand jury, but what is your opinion? Maybe okay to swear in a trial jury, but not the grand jury. Just want a second opinion. Well, I think the fact of the matter is that I don't think the people should be taking any kind of an oath to be sworn to obey an oath per se concerning the Constitution. I think they need to take a vow to God, and that's what we are setting up under the common law system. If a judge wants to come in and let them to take an oath, yeah, we don't have a problem with that. Remember, the Constitution was not written for we the people. The Constitution was written by we the people. Why would we take an oath over something we've established and require that they obey? We're not required to obey the Constitution per se. We don't have the right or the authority, in a sense, to take people's property. That would be a criminal act, to take someone's property. And if a court takes it without following the Constitution, which they are sworn to obey, that too would be a criminal act if they didn't give the person due process before taking that property, and then therefore having the authority. And it would be we, the people, that give them the authority to take that property through what's called the trial jury. So why we, the people, would take an oath is really kind of, I think, is contradictive to what and who we are. But we must take a vow to operate with a sense of honor, sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. We have to take the higher grounds. And that is exactly why I read today Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 48. We need to take the higher ground. We have to come in with a sense of honor, sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And we have to teach all jurists to do the same during this time period as being a jurist. And we have to make a real big deal about it and impress upon these people. We get 8 hours to do that. And, of course, we have to be very careful how we handle a jury or a grand jury once we get into those positions, not that we're going to press them or push them in a certain direction, nor are we going to help them write their papers beyond what they really mean. So we have to be very careful. Otherwise, we would be doing and performing criminal acts. That would be the administrators of this process. Okay, I don't know if anybody else has anything to bring up. Gerard, Gary, Robert, Jan, anyone? If you got anything, unmute your mic.
Only that
I'm not hearing
we need
anybody.
We also want to put out a reminder. We sent out a second copy of the newsletter because we've been discovering some inadequacies of our email. And there is not going to be a district or state call on Wednesday night, but everybody is welcome, but it's mainly going to be a district leader and state coordinator meeting on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, but everybody is welcome to join.
Okay, yeah, I forgot about that. I appreciate it. That's going to be Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this conference room. So, again, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Jan, did you want to pipe in anything?
Yeah, I wanted to thank everybody that sent in something for the weekly newsletter. A couple things arrived a little bit late, so they'll go next week. And please keep the information, articles, and so on coming, and just send them to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll be happy to put them in print. Okay? Thanks.
Okay, and also we're going to start again to get super active with our Courtroom Observers Committee, which actually every member of National Liberty Alliance ultimately should be participating. We will be sending out information via email concerning what we're going to be asking people to do. We're filing a lot of papers, and under certain papers, we'll give a little information in the email and explain to you what it is we're looking for people to do, what phone number to call, and give you an idea of what needs to be said. We have to be extremely respectful. We cannot lose our patience with these people if we're on the phone. We can't get angry with them. And no matter what they say or do to us, we need to be respectful. We need to take the higher ground. If we don't take the higher ground, we lose and they win. We're going to really need everybody to get involved here. When we send out a phone number, that's a national thing. We need people to make phone calls. If we need people to attend a court hearing or something somewheres, that'll only go out in the state. It won't go out national. So we won't be sending to everyone in the United States information on something that took place in California or New York. Only California or New York will get that information. And those members of that state hopefully will go to the court, especially those who are close by, and support the individuals. If we can get one, two, three, or more people into a hearing where they can come in and bear witness by writing an affidavit of what goes on in that courtroom. We're also in the process, we talked about this before, we kind of dropped the ball on it for numerous reasons, but doesn't matter, we're coming back at it now. We're trying to work out a badge. It's not really a badge, it's a card. It'll be a card that'll hang around your neck, and it'll be both two-sided. One side will identify the individual as, a judicial oversight committee under the authority of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Or we might do their state. I don't know. Right now I think we should do the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury because we have to act in one accord. So I think that's probably where we're going to be heading with this. But we'll be having a meeting very soon, I hope, to kind of brainstorm the card, you know, what it's going to look like and how we're going to put it together. So the one side is going to identify, you know, in a sense, who we are, what we're doing there, and we'll court and we'll observe this for judicial oversight. The other side will identify the individual, put their picture on it, and this way, and it'll be laminated, I think it said, laminated. We want to make a really nice, handsome-looking ID card that would hang around people's necks and identify them. It's extremely important to go in with decent clothes, dress pants maybe, a shirt, and if you want to wear a tie and a jacket, that's fine. Or a nice jacket or a sweater or something, whatever, a vest. But we want to look presentable. We don't want to go in there sloppy, like I usually do, but I'm going to change my ways. But in any event, we want to go in there respectful. We want to intimidate. We want to bring our clipboard or some kind of a folder with a pad in there. We want to make sure we have a pen. And we want to sit as close up front as possible. And that pen needs to be moving every time that judge opens his mouth, even if you're drawing pictures. But basically, we're looking for people to do affidavits. The individual who you're doing the affidavit for will give you their information at the courtroom as far as a mailing address. Once the affidavit is done, you write basic notes on paper. You go home with it. You type it up on your computer. Take it down, get it notarized, and then mail it out to the individual that has requested this. And this, of course, is helpful to their case. So anyway, we need to help each other. We need to go to court with each other. We need to support each other. But the phone calls really is going to be the big thing over the course of the next month or two. We really want to start pushing hard and heavy on phone calls. And that might even start this week. So we're going to be having a meeting to try to get together a schedule of things going on and what we're doing. And it'll be some kind of a projected schedule for the purpose of being able to send out this information, but we will confirm those dates before we actually email the information and the request of what it is that we're asking people to do. Either, again, making phone calls or in cases of people close by in areas, maybe attend a court hearing. Okay, let's see if there's anything else here. I think I covered everything, did I not? Gary, Gerard, you got anything?
Yeah, Gerard had something, but I don't want to speak for him. But I think we may want to have a, maybe it was something for a separate conference. Never mind, it wasn't public.
Hey, hey Gary?
Yes.
I already spoke to John about it before the meeting. I'll call you.
All right.
He was coming in broken up to me. Was he okay to you?
Well, I heard enough words to put it together.
Figure it out. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I don't know why he's coming in pretty bad. He usually comes in pretty clear. Last week he had problems also.
Yeah.
So are you coming in through your Skype, Gerard? Yeah, go ahead, ignore me. See if I can. Unmute yourself to talk. Okay, I don't know where he's at, but all right. Anyway, let's move on. I think that brings us to Q&A. I have nothing else to bring up, so let's open up the mic. Now, before we open Q&A, let's give a couple, let's give 20 seconds or so, 30 seconds to people who are new, people who have never had the opportunity to speak on the mic and ask questions, people who maybe have been trying for a couple of weeks to get onto the mic and we were unable to get to them. So let's let those people who haven't been on the mic, let them come in first 20 seconds as soon as I hit this Q&A. Okay, again, anybody who has not been on the mic, never been on the mic, someone who's new, or people who haven't been on the mic for quite some time and have been trying to get on the mic, if you want to get on the mic, now is the time to get into QA. Star 6 to get into the Q&A. Again, star 6. Let's give people a few more seconds before anybody else gets in. Star 6, Q&A. Star 6. Jan, you've been on the mic last week and every week for a while, so you shouldn't be jumping in here yet. Okay, anyone else? Okay, anybody can get into the mic, into the Q&A now. Okay, let's take our first caller. Richie from New Hampshire, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Thanks. How you doing, John? I got a couple of things.
Good. How you doing,
Rich? I sent questions in, I'd say, for the past 6 or 7 weeks, and I haven't heard one of them answered. I'm just wondering if you know what the problem is.
Did you send it to questions with a plural?
Yes, at National Liberty Alliance.
At nationallibertyalliance.org?
Yep.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know why. Gary,
I'd say three or four questions.
Wait, who's this from?
It's coming from Richie from New Hampshire.
Richie Merritt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, about the, as a sheriff, do you have to serve papers on a person when that paper violates their rights under the Constitution? Or you have to wait until the judge hears the case before you arrest the judge? I believe you don't have to serve the papers in that situation. I didn't understand the question. I should have
gotten that. Well, maybe you can ask the question a little clearer. Go ahead, ask that question to Rich, and I'll try to respond.
My question's a little broader than that because I've sent in questions, two or three questions over the past 6 or 7 weeks. And honestly, I don't recall what they are, but I've been listening attentively to see if they came out and they haven't. So I was just wondering why. And I also have a suggestion for NLA. I'd like to present it to you and the membership. I think it's a good tool. But first, I just wanted to know about the questions.
Well, I've only
I've only got
the one question from you, Richie. So there's no conspiracy.
Yeah, I don't recall any either. And again, you know, I miss out on a lot of stuff, and that's why Gary gets a copy, Gerard gets a copy, and between the three of us, we should catch the question. So I'm wondering in the beginning if you would just made a mistake there in the spelling somewhere or something, and then I don't know. So, but anyway,
I'm not accusing anybody, so don't be defensive.
Yeah, I know that. I'm just saying that something went wrong somewhere. So,
yeah,
but go ahead.
I got a question from Rich on the 29th about would it be possible to put the words on a local level under the words only people can say America on the following page. Now, that was, you said that the 29th, I think it was? That's when I got it anyway.
I didn't get that one that time.
Yeah, he broke it up pretty bad. The 29th is what I heard. I sent the question.
9/29.
Yeah, Gerard, I don't know why you're breaking up so bad.
Okay, wait a second. Wait, there is one here last week. Yes. Hello, John. I was wondering if it would be possible for you to put the words on a local level, under the words, only the people can save America, on the front of the webpage. Also, could you put a link to the Quaranto?
I don't understand that. What do you mean? Say it again, Gary.
Well, he says you can put the words on a local level under the words "only the people can save America." So he means only the people can save America on a local level.
Oh, okay. We'll talk about it. Yeah.
More specifically, what I was doing is. We the people that are listening in on this phone call understand the web page. People who are new that come to the web page, they don't even know enough to hit the jurist tab that they have to sign up as a jurist. So they're kind of out of luck.
Nobody's signing up as a jurist. They become members of a website for the sole purpose to get access to areas that they wouldn't necessarily have if they're not members. Also, it sets the stage for us to know who our members are, what's going on, and then for them to be able to do things like take the free civics course, also get involved in the other courses that we're providing and working with administrators and so on. But no one is signing up as a jurist. I know in the beginning we kind of spoke that way, but we corrected that, I think, early on, realizing we can't really become jurists per se. We're really working towards the administrators. Now, we do come together as a grand jury nationwide. We get a couple of hundred people usually whenever we have those meetings. And then we keep coming together, and we'll continue to come together, the same people. Sometimes other people will join in. Sometimes people can't make it, but it doesn't matter. We've got quite a few people. Generally, it's just a lot of the same people. And that's okay because we're dealing with one case, and that's subversion against the United States of America. And until that case is dealt with and put away and finished and completed, we're going to continue as a grand jury, collectively speaking. That's why we put together the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. But we won't be hearing other cases per se. We are dealing with habeas corpus, and we're dealing from the administrative side of things. And when people deny or resist or ignore that habeas corpus that are servants, and we've given the authority in the courts, such as judges and also lawyers, particularly prosecutors and so on. When they ignore these things, well, we may come to the point where we'll do actually an indictment. That's a very strong possibility as we go through the processes.
So. Well, I have just one suggestion to make, John. I've done this myself, and I don't know how it's going to work. It's not going to happen for another 7 or 8 months, but you might want to consider putting some people, some guest speakers on this conference line. And inviting various groups. I'll mention a few. I mean, there's like the Liberty Beacon. They've got 400 and something members. Everybody in their respective states have affiliates or members that they know of. You could invite on this conference call. And I'll give you three names. Chris Ann Hall. Jerry Day. Chris Ann Hall. She's a constitutional attorney. She doesn't charge anything. She's very good. What I'm trying to do is tell you that this is a great recruitment tool. The other one is Michael Badnarik, and I don't know anything about the man other than his videos. But someone should be trying to get these people on. Let them speak for an hour. Let other people hear them so that they can get the education instead of listening to us all the time. To bring recruitment in is what I'm talking about. And just one closing thought, I'll get off. I know there's a lot of people. If I come up and I say something, and this is aimed at Gary because he always thinks I'm defensive. I believe in constructive criticism. If you want to surround yourself with yes men, you're going to go nowhere. I'm not vindictive. I'm not being assertive towards anybody. I'm offering suggestions. I'm NLA all the way. Just want you to know that.
Yeah, we have talked about having guests. As a matter of fact, we did invite an individual on, and we did speak with them, or we had a good conversation, which was the author of Common Law, Brent Winters. And he was the author of Common Law, a book that I bring up from time to time. And he said in the near future he'd be interested in coming on and talking. So as long as we get a good subject matter, that'd be good. Michael Badnarik, who I'd love to have him on, great guy, and he'd be talking about the Constitution, and that would be great. Constitutional attorney, I don't know whether we would have that person on. First of all, the fact that they're an attorney puts puts up a flag. Okay, I don't know if they're a bar attorney or what. If they're not a bar attorney, we might talk with them. But bear in mind, what we have discovered, and we have gone through a process of evolution over the past couple of years, trying to understand the process, trying to understand how we can get into the courts, how can we get power back to the people. And we've made some errors along the way, and we've adjusted ourselves and corrected ourselves as those errors are found and realizations that we should be going this direction or that direction. So we're always kind of making sure we're heading the right direction. But we have developed, and this has come through experience, we have developed certain responses and also certain mindsets concerning jurisdiction, first of all. If we were to give the mic to somebody talk to us for a half hour, an hour, whatever, I'd want to be very careful on what they're going to be talking about because I don't want to get confrontatious. I don't want to get argumentative. I don't want to become a debate. We want people who are in agreement with our strategy and our vision of what it is that we're trying to do. One of the big, big problems, okay, that a lot of people have, and I get letters or emails or things from people all the time. They're very concerned about certain language we might use or certain positions we might have or the way we go into the court. You see, our strategy is we give no credibility to the fiction. Therefore, we give no reality. They're criminals. It's a fraud. And if I use the word citizen, so be it. I'm not in their sandbox. None of us are in their sandbox, and we're not going to go into their sandbox, and we're not going to let them try to capture us because we use a word that they robbed from us in the first place. Okay, the United States citizen is a word that they robbed from us, and if you go into 26 U.S. Code 26. You'll find the game that they played, that the U.S. citizen are people from Guam, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, the Philippines, and the District of Columbia. That's the U.S. citizens. And so they play a game with that. They're not really talking about us. But then when they talk in the courts and they're talking about U.S. citizens, people are lost. But again, that's playing in their ballpark. That's playing in their sandbox. We don't do that. So it's a strategy that we have. It's an extremely important one. It's a mindset. If the person who would be talking on these issues, if they didn't have an understanding of that mindset, they'd go a different direction, and it would be an extreme difference of what conclusions we would come up to conclusions that they would come up to. The other thing is everything we argue in the court is jurisdiction. It's always jurisdiction, and they don't have it. And again, they have to understand jurisdiction. We're not going to, again, give merit to the criminals. We're not going to give merit to the fraud. We're going to call it for what it is. And so to put someone like that on, I would have to really have some good conversation they'd have to be kind of, for lack of better words, hanging out with us for a while. We need to know who they are before we give a mic to someone and then take us down another road that we don't need. Now we've got to go back to correction. And so we won't do that. But again, people like Michael Bodnarik, Brent Winters on Common Law, these guys are very good in their fields, and I've read their books. I've heard them talk, and I don't think there'd be much that I'd disagree with them. But we also would also entertain someone like Bill Thornton. We have a few strategy differences, and I would talk with him. If he wanted to come in and talk with us, we'd love to have him talk. I would probably have a little bit of a conversation with him, and I'm sure he'd go along with the realization that we have a different strategy in this area or that area. I don't care if he brings it up, as long as he gives both sides, hey, this is what I think, but I know the strategy that NLA is bringing is this, and so on and so forth. That's fine. So we would do that. Matter of fact, that is part of our plan at some time in the future to do that.
All right, John, we're exceeding 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, this was a good, it was supposed to be
talking. Just giving you just a heads up.
I know. Thank you. Okay, Rich, appreciate the call. But it's a good point, and we definitely are considering exactly that. Okay?
Yes.
All right. We'll take our next caller now. We're going to go to Michael from New York. You got the mic.
John, how you doing? This is Mike from Buffalo, New York, Watchdog.
How you doing?
And good. Doing really good. Hey, I haven't heard. Might be my fault. I don't know. But I haven't heard anything said about the family court action. What's going on with that, or who do I contact?
What we're doing is habeas corpus, is period. And, out of the habeas corpus, when we come down to the memorandum of decision, at the bottom of the memorandum of decision, we've recently added that these people must be restored back to their original state before they were assaulted by these people. Whatever that is, if they had to spend $30,000 in lawyers, they got to deal with those people. If people, even in like someone who's doing a mortgage thing, if they lost their home, they got to get their home back,
Right.
Once they default these things. So that's where we're going with that. The key thing is to get the children back in the sense of family courts, to get these people out of their lives. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't need some counseling, you see, because really what the state should be providing is just counseling. And people really, they have the option of going or not going, but if someone believes that a child is really being abused and they have some evidence of that, and they can't get him into counseling to deal with that problem, then they would have to take, at least under common law, the way we're trying to get things back to, they would have to then go down, they'd have to go to the grand jury administrators, or the jury administrators, shall I say. And the jury administrators would then have the option to try to intervene and to talk to these people and to try to get them to counsel to correct the problem. And again, if they didn't participate with that or didn't want to participate with that, and again, if the grand jury administration thought that there was something that needs to be done, they can then take it to the grand jury. And it would be a suggestion to the grand jury that they interview the people and see if they can't convince them to go to the counseling and take care of these problems. And if they don't, then they're going to be subject to indictment, and then you'll get a trial jury come and look into the situation and decide for them. But that would be due process, and it would be proper. And that's the way all these family courts need to be going. It's really, you don't destroy families. You try to fix them if you can. Family is the core of our nation, and they've been destroying our families for at least 50 years. But it's the core of the nation, and we need to give whatever aid and assistance we can to people who may be dysfunctional families where there is something, whether the parents realize it or not, that the child is being injured. So, we need to do something maybe, but in most cases, really, it's vindictiveness, it's an assault, it's made up, and often you'll find a battle between a mom and a dad who are breaking up, and then the court gets in. Of course, they always go with the mom, usually, not all the time, but usually, and they destroy the dad. Dad can't see the kid. You can't see your child no more. And they just take more and more money from them, and they got to pay the fathers, got to pay for all the lawyers, and it just goes on and on and on. It's insane. It's destructive, you know.
Two people break up.
I think we the people need to be looking from the benefit of the child. The child needs mom and dad. Bare minimum, 50-50. There's nothing else to discuss. Now, they may decide one will do 30 and the other 70 because maybe dad can't do 50. Well, that's between them. That's their business. But the thing is, you know, again, the government, we know they're just destructive. So we're still doing it, but we're doing habeas corpuses. And we'll be more involved in it once we're in the courts.
Yeah. Well, the habeas corpus wouldn't work, I don't believe, in my case, because my kids are older. They've already reached the age old enough where they can decide where they want to be, and
they
don't want nothing to do with it. My one boy's 19. He just went into the Army. My other boy's going to be 18 in December, and one girl's going to be 16.
Okay. And what about the 16-year-old?
She wants nothing to do with me, thanks to the court system. They're not in the system.
The
CPS didn't take them away. They just prevented me from seeing them for well over 14 years.
Yeah, that's what they do. You know, restitution is a necessity at some point in the near future. Once we, the people, get back control, you can go in and get restitution. There is no, statute of limitations in common law because there are no statutes.
Right. So I figured what I figured,
I think a confession has to be made in people, especially if they're still alive, and I'm sure a lot of them are. And I think, your children need to understand that that it's not you that didn't come to see them. It was the court that prevented them, that prevented you. And it was the court that assaulted you and whatever it is that took place in your life. Again, restitution.
Right.
And, you can never replace or give back 14 years of your children's childhood. I mean, it's a horrible situation.
I blame the system on the lawyers, all the lawyers involved.
The Bar Association, absolutely, and they're all part of the whole game. They're brainwashed. They're useful idiots. They're all brainwashed, and that's the problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, question number two. I have the jurisdictionary program for the statutory courts.
We're going to make this short because we're only doing one question. You can get back in line, but go ahead, real quick.
Okay.
The jurisdictionary, because I'm interested in talking about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it would be neat if you could put together a common law jurisdictionary type thing, giving a whole procedure on how we could go about doing it pretty much the jurisdictionary way.
Well, we did. It's up there. It's called Court Access. You can find it on our website. I'm not sure exactly where it is. It's been a long time. Probably under essays and lectures, you'll find Court Access in there, I believe. We do have a book. Gives the way the process of courts go and, the paperwork and the back and forth and the motions. But bear in mind, that's the way they work. We just want to give them the information so you know. We needed to know how they worked in order to get into the court and deal with them. And jurisdictionary gave us that knowledge, and we did do a booklet, an electronic booklet online. You can download with a lot of information, forms and ideas and different things. But the key thing is really taking the common law positioning. And at some point, at some point, we probably will write a course on court access more into the way common law works. We just don't have the time right now to do it.
Hey, John, I don't know if you remember when you did that. I looked through it recently, and I was very surprised because that's exactly what you did on the paperwork. The examples, you did not use the normal paperwork. You used the common law language to open the court up.
We've always done, yes.
Yeah, that is worth its weight in gold. You got to go read that book before and see how he did that, because it eases you into, and he did a very good job of making those papers like common law papers where you're reserving your court of record. It's opening a court of record. That's a big, big plus when you're doing a court case that you do that.
Absolutely. Where is that, Gerard?
It's in that jurisdiction, in that court access court, which had
been
up
there
for
a couple
years.
You know, a lot of things that in the court access, you know, it talks about a lot of the summary proceedings that they do. We don't cover the fact in that particular course that that's not part of common law, because again, you know, that was put together very early on. And but in any event, the key thing is we don't get involved in all of these different kinds of motions and summary proceedings and all these things that are not part of common law. But you need to understand that this is what they do, and this is what the paperwork, and you need to then respond to that paperwork appropriately. And one of the best ways, ultimately, is objection to the process is not according to common law. The judge will overrule you and say, look, this is the way it's going. Just shut up and sit down. Let's move on here. And you object one more time, and then you go home and you write a writ of error. That's key, okay? You write a writ of error. Now remember, a writ of error is letting the judge know that they got an error. They made an error. It's not a decision per se, and a lot of people, I really thought of it from that perspective, but it's not from that perspective at all. You bring in all of the necessary points, maybe from American jurisprudence or wherever it is that you're working from, Supreme Court rulings, and you bring it in, you show them, you're in error. This is what they say. This is what you're saying. You're wrong. And you overrule them. You turn it back, and you discard anything they had to say. Of course, they ignore it, and so on and so forth. Now, that's arguing in their court also, so that becomes a different kind of a problem. And you got to be careful how much you get involved with that, because if you are bringing the court into the common law and you're getting it, but then they start bringing the garbage in, that's how you stop it. But look, at the fact that you're there for a hearing automatically tells you you're not in a common law court. The fact that there's no jury involved tells you you're not in a common law court. And so you object to the whole process, and then you give them opportunity to retract the jurisdiction, or you do other things. You know, then you're going to have to sue them in a federal court for violating your unalienable right of due process.
Okay, does that mean that the statute of limitations then are overruled when you do it that way under the common law?
There's no such thing as statute of limitations in common law. Remember, statutory law is one, common law is another. You cannot guide a person's life and make decisions for persons with statutes. And that's all illegal in common law. You can't make a statute that you can't smoke marijuana. It's none of the government's business whether you smoke marijuana. I mean, look, sometimes there's good reasons to smoke marijuana. I mean, there are people for medical purposes. Some people use it for pain. People with Tourette's use it. It seems to help those people. You know, what is it? The hemp oil itself is good to cure cancer and many other ailments. Hemp is great for making rope. You can make a guy made a car out of it. It's indestructible, a car out of hemp. And, you know, so it has all its purpose. And you know what? If someone wants to take a little marijuana and use it recreationally from time, that's their business. It's nothing to do with the government. You know, and the same thing, look, if a person wants to stick a needle in their arm, they're going to stick a needle in their arm anyway, okay? You know, it's not a good thing to do. I would try to talk my neighbor or friend out of doing that. I would try to help them, but they got to really want to help themselves. And but when you get rid of all this junk, bear in mind, you just got rid of a lot of violence in the streets, because once you deal with the drug problem and no longer are drug dealers making money off of it, all that goes away. All that violence goes away, all that destruction, and, you know, our children getting put onto dope early on in the schools. That's because dope dealers are out there making money, and they're getting them addicted and hooked early on, and they become, their customers.
Right.
And so all that would disappear. You know? But anyway, the point is you can't make statutes to control a person's life. Common law doesn't permit it. We make statutes to control commercial business and different things, and it's all in the Constitution where we've given them the authority to make statutes. And so, you know, we may require certain things for truck drivers and on commercial traveling, and that's appropriate. It's when they break those rules or anything, they can have a penalty, and that is all appropriate. And if they don't want to abide by those agreements and those statutes, then they don't have to drive their truck. And now there's a lot of commercial things, a lot of things going on that we do have to have rules and keep things working in certain ways so that people aren't injured and things are done appropriately. So
right.
That's what statutes
okay, well,
are for.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you. I yield to somebody else, John. Have a blessed
all
night.
Right,
God bless.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Let's go to Ed in Oklahoma. Go right ahead, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm fairly new. Just joined you about a month ago. And I'm just actually just wanting to thank you guys, man, for all your efforts, and I'm really excited about being part of what we're doing.
Okay, we appreciate that. And get involved. We got all these committees going on. We got a lot of things we're doing, and we're also building up administrations. If you want to become an administrator in the future, that's what we're preparing people for. And we need 4 administrators in every county. It's a paid position, paid by the government. With the process of all that, how that works, we've already worked that out. But
right.
We're not going to discuss too much about it. When the time comes, we'll get into it. But right now they're getting paid. You got judges and lawyers being paid to taint the jury, because that's exactly what they're doing. And we could do it a lot cheaper when we the people do it, and we'll bring justice back, and we wouldn't deal with all these stupid statutes, and we wouldn't allow people to go to jail because of the stupid statute. Under the common law, there are great penalties if you do something stupid yourself and you injure somebody or harm or hurt their property. You're going to pay. You're going to pay restitution back to that individual. So,
right.
We don't need statutes to tell us. We need injured people. And look, if we teach our children in school, we bring all this stuff into school, as the Lord promised, train up a child on how they should walk when they get older, they will not depart from it. So right now they're training good little commies and Nazis in schools, and that's our children. That's why I never send my children to school. But that's our children, okay? We need to be training up liberty-minded people in school. We need to be training up people to be responsible people, to responsible to themselves and to their neighbors. We could do this in school, and it could be supported, of course, at home. That's what parents should want. And we can have a good society as best as can be, a lot better than what we have right now.
Well, I'll tell you, do you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. To add to what I said, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it, but in Plymouth, Massachusetts, there's a statue that was made over 100 years ago called the Matrix of Liberty. You could look it up on YouTube. And it's basically about how our forefathers built what we have, or have had, actually, through common law. And it was very inspiring. It's basically saying we lost morality and we went too far from God and so many other things. And it kind of gives the blueprint. It's like only a 15-minute video. And it's really a profound awakening. And to answer your question, I actually am doing the civics course right now. I do want to become an administrator. I'm 56 years old. In the last 5 years, I've been waking up and seeing all the stuff that's happening. I got so much frustration in me because, up until now, I felt helpless. And, with all the body of knowledge that you have on this website and offering me opportunities to take our country back is really exciting. And I've become a lot calmer and prouder because I know we can do this. As long as we educate. I can't tell you how much I've been talking to my kids. I have 6 kids. I got my son on the course as well. He's taking a course too. So I'm just so proud of you guys and what you're doing. And this is a great opportunity for everybody to, even like I know you said it many times, just anybody can take this course just to get information and know what our rights are. And the videos I heard and the audios, it's just awesome. And I just want to thank you guys for this, and I'm excited.
Well, we appreciate it. Remember, to God be the glory. And we have to educate the people to take back the nation. People forgot what liberty is. They think freedom is liberty. It's a big difference, liberty and freedom. And one of the key things our founding fathers said, Benjamin Franklin was extremely, pushing on this, and so was Jefferson. Regardless of what people say about their moral being, they had great moral fabric. Unless we become a morally minded people, a godly people, this government is set up for nobody else but. Jefferson and Franklin made it clear where this setup of our government came from, and it came ultimately from Mosaic law. Matter of fact, what do they call it, the seal, the U.S. seal, the government, federal government seal, they wanted, both of them came up with two different interpretations of Exodus on the seal. And then the committee kind of put that aside for a while, and then they came back with something else much later. So already the enemy was in play trying to destroy. They were there in the Federalist Papers, and even in the Anti-Federalist Papers, they were there. When they were hammering out the Constitution. So, again, we have to be morally minded. And by God's mercy, really, it's the Bill of Rights, which is the capstone to the Constitution, that really repaired any error or problem inside the Constitution. Because the Bill of Rights, the Constitution must be read in light of the Bill of Rights. You cannot violate anybody's unalienable rights. And that was brilliant. And it works. I've been through the Constitution, tearing it apart, looking at everything, particularly the powers that were given to the three branches. And there are places where they could have fudged a little here and fudged there, but the Bill of Rights prevents it. So it's a very, very powerful document, very well written, and of course, it's just extraordinary. But unless we're morally minded, the king of our court, originally in the United States, when this in 1789, when this whole thing was set up, the king of the court was Christ. God was the king of the court. We've lost that, and the judges have become the kings of the court. We need to bring those people out of there and bring back the king of the court. And by the way, we do have a Sunday morning Bible study for anyone at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room for anyone who wants to meet the king of the court. You come to our Bible studies.
I'm there every Sunday.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, I just thank you guys, and I'm excited to be part of this whole thing. So, again, I appreciate it, man, all your efforts.
Thanks a lot, Ed. All right, well, let's take our next caller, 719 number. You got the mic. You should have heard. You've been unmuted.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep. Oh, we can hear you.
Hi, my name is Jacob Keller. I'm a new member. I just signed up under reference of my father, Doug Keller. But I'm calling because I would like some legal advice on a situation that's happened in my life.
We don't give legal advice, so we can't give legal advice. No.
No.
All right, what we want to do is we want to educate people in order for them to get the necessary understanding. If you're stuck in a situation and you're in a court and you're being abused, we can do a habeas corpus to get you out. You can go out to the website, and on the right side you'll see the frowning face holding up a sign, help. Click on that and then choose the path concerning your particular problem or situation and fill out the form, and then we will assist you to get you out of that court. So that's what we can do. We don't give legal advice, first of all, numerous reasons. And number one, it takes up a lot of time, and we lose focus of where we're at. What we're trying to do is save the nation and not get involved in court cases. Another problem is they like to try to put people in jail for doing those kind of things, and there's numerous scams that they have going to try to incarcerate people. So we'll be being very careful not to fall into that kind of a situation. we have enough of a battle to win the nation back, then we don't need to be battling personal situations to stay out of their silly courts. So for those reasons, but we do offer all of the prerequisites in order to go into a court, how to write the papers, how the papers are written in the courts. We have common law, lectures, and a lot of that is, of course, covered in our civics course. But we do have, which we spoke a little earlier about, court access electronic book you can download. And also, you know, we're teaching people to write just by reading our papers. And if you read our paper, and we teach people how to open a court of record and how to take control of their court and bring it in through the jurisdiction, but all of that is really out there, bringing together numerous individuals who have, lectures, or brought together a booklet to show people how to do the necessary forms and how things work. And if you read our paperwork, it also teaches you how to write papers. So again, that's available for you.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
I was just wondering, what's your opinion on having felons never be able to own a weapon again?
Well, first of all, when a person does something wrong and they injure another person, whatever the case may be, and let's say in a real court of law, not these kangaroo courts that they have, but in a real court of law, you injure somebody. Okay, well, in common law, it requires restitution first and foremost. Whether there is a jail requirement or not, that's usually violence, it's all up to the jury. But restitution, that's the key. But once you pay back your debt to society, no reason in the world why you shouldn't be able to go out and get a weapon again. We don't want to bring people to a situation their whole life they can't get a weapon. I know somebody who had it was a felony charge back when they were 18 years old, and they got a little trouble back then. But got into his 20s and didn't have any more problems since then. And they're in their 70s now. Can't get a gun because of what happened when he was 18, 19. It's absurd. Look, you're throwing people out of society. You got to bring them back into society. Common law does not allow for eternal loss of right of having a defensive weapon.
Yeah, the funny thing is the victim doesn't want to press charges, and I am doing restitution because it's my wife, and it was an accident, and, I'm having a lot of issues. Anyways, thanks for the input and advice.
Yeah. Once we, the people, take back the courts and bring justice back into the courts, bringing the king of the court back into the court, and then the government will fall back under control because they'll know we, the people, come out and get them, so they'll do the right thing. And then we'll have an honest government doing the right thing. And at that point, we will we're going to bring back the common law. Those people who have not been able to have a weapon because they were convicted in some kangaroo court in the beginning is a problem right there. A lot of cases are they're not. There's really no crime usually, so. Anyway, we the people need to fix it. That's what we're working on.
Hey, John, I just want to say something here, dovetail a little bit. Isn't it funny that when I was growing up as a kid, we'd watch the Western, and when the sheriff let the guys out of jail, he always threw their gun on the counters and gave them their guns back, right?
Right.
And we never questioned that. Nobody was, he gave the guns back. But they've brainwashed us so bad that now we question that. And the same token, if guys stole a guy's horse and left him in the desert, when they caught those guys, they hung them. And the reason they did that is because when you steal a guy's horse and leave him in the desert, that's like a death sentence. So people, you have to understand, under common law, it's much more fair, but sometimes the sentences are much harsher than statutory law. So, they've changed us so much that we go, he's a felon and he had a gun. Look, you could let your insurance lapse, drive your car, you just committed a felony. because the insurance companies have made sure that they had laws in to protect their income. You know, if you're driving without insurance and you didn't kill somebody and there's no injured party, how can that be a felony? Against who? The insurance companies? So it just goes to show how much we question ourselves where we never questioned it in the past. That's all it's a good issue to show us how far into slavery we've come. Okay, mm-hmm. I yield.
Exactly. Okay, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And we'll take our next caller. Let's see. It's a 214 number.
Auntie
something? Yes.
It's Auntie Jen. That's my nickname. This is Cinder in Texas, and I'm a new kid on the block and signed up for the civics courses and been attending on Monday night. Two quick questions. My first question is, how do I access what you read about sovereignty and in the beginning, the sovereignty?
The two papers, yes. You know what? I realize, I don't think I got both. Let me go take a look. If you go up to, well, I'll tell you what, the best thing to do is just type in, because it'll go directly to the page, power of the county sheriff.com. Okay, and that'll go right to the page. I'm trying to see where the page is on our website. It's under county sheriff. Okay, but in any event, if you go there, you'll see all of the memos on that page, and you'll be able to read all the memos. And you'll also see all of the court papers that we filed on this page also. Scrolling down to see if we got – now, we only got three memos up there right now. Memo number 4 and memo number 5 needs to be put up there, and I'll try to remember to do that tonight when I upload the program.
Okay,
you know, tonight's program.
And that's under that heading, I'll find the sovereign and the summary proceedings, correct?
Yes, once we put it up. If Gary, if you've got the time, if you could do this for me, I can pass you those two papers. And you want to put them up right now?
Gary had to leave.
Oh, Gary had to leave. Okay. All right. Well, I'll do it when I'm not talking. Maybe when Gerard takes the mic, I'll put them up there. So we'll get them done before the program even ends. Okay?
Thank you so much. And I joined. I wanted to join as a premier member, but I didn't mm-hmm. want to do the 5G a month deal because, I just wanted to get it done. I understand the fee was $60, but there's nowhere on a one-time shot to pony up the $60. The least you can join.
Yeah, one of the things, we have people who send money through the mail, and if they don't give me certain information, I can't turn them over to being a premium member. And then sometimes things get so busy and I just don't even have the time to even do that. I'm thinking, and I haven't spoke with the leadership yet, but I'm thinking of doing away with the premier members as far as putting that next to a person's name, only because, there's people who are giving and I'm unable to, because that has to, I have to actually go flip a button at that point and, do a couple of things to make that happen. And right now, it's hard enough to get done what I have to get done, and we have a lot of people doing a lot of work, and... I'm thinking of just doing away with that. One of the main reasons we've done that, you see, we don't want to require people to pay money to get into our website to take the course or to become a member and get onto certain. We don't want to require them money because some people don't have the money, and we appreciate that. But we do need money in order to survive, so we ask for $5. It's not a lot, and, $5 or more a month.
Okay, practical challenge. Just let me make this comment, then I'll ring off. I did write a little note when I did join as to that, and then I didn't get a little welcome letter. I'm just making a comment.
You mean when you joined?
Yeah.
Or when you gave a donation or something.
Well, I joined and I gave the donation, and in my little and I don't want to make this rocket science. I wrote a little note that said, "Boom! I would appreciate being able to pony up to $60 as to, and then not have to have the $5 taken out, just a one-time shot." So I did go ahead and send the $100 just to make it simple. I'm a simple gal. I just want the one, two, three piece.
Well, one of the things, just so you know, it should have been set. Well, it was set up because I set it up automatically to, you know, welcome. A thank you letter goes out whenever anybody makes a donation. But if that's not working, I'll need to go out there and try to reset it to make sure, because that could have been shut off somehow. Not to, you know, things happen.
Just going back
to one of the main reasons why we were doing Premier. When we set this up, we were doing Premier next to people's names so that when people got involved on the website and they were talking and having conversation, the people who are supporting us would be seen and the people who aren't supporting us would be seen. And maybe that would push the people to say, well, maybe I should give $5 and be a Premier member too. So, you know, because we need that money. If we don't get $5 a month from people, and some people give us 10, some 20, some 50, and even some 100. And so if we don't get that money, we can't continue. It costs thousands of dollars to keep things going here. And, you know, we got a lot of costs on the website, broadband. We have tremendous amounts of information people are downloading. And we have maintenance and different things. So, you know, it just costs money. So that was one of the reasons. And it didn't really work the way we hoped, so I'm thinking of just removing it, because then you have the person who really can't give, because we do have some people who are on Social Security and they're living, they're barely getting enough to even make it through the month, you know, and so we don't want to embarrass them either, you know, so that's that is a problem when they can't be a Premier member because they can't give and we don't want to embarrass them.
Got it, John.
I'm thinking of doing away with it.
And then finally, of course, it takes money to run anything. It's a tool. And so just that I've been praying that, you know, for the angels to come along and fund this wonderful effort for us to restore our beloved nation to God's righteousness. So wonderful. Happy to be part of it. Okay.
Bye-bye. Well, we are on a shoestring, you know, we're operating on a shoestring budget, and we've been doing so for a couple of years now, and even before that, you know, we've been a learning process for goodness 6 years, maybe more. And you know, everything has just been just by the skin of our teeth, getting through this, getting through that, paying for this, keeping this on and keeping that on. You know, we just on phones alone, we run fax machines 24/7, and that's a little over $400 a month right there, just on that one little bill. It's not a little bill, but it's a bill.
Well,
you know?
John, I'm a biggie believer. So here's the thing:
like for everyone to know that this is a good conversation, not just for you and me, but for other people to hear and understand. You know.
Yeah. You gotta have it. You gotta have money for tools to work. And I understand that. And you know, Matthew 18 says, if two or more come into agreement, asking, you know, in Jesus' name, it shall be done of our Father. And so I believe that coming down the pike, yippee!
Right.
God bless you.
and we believe in the widow's mite. You know, that $5. Look at it. You know, you just. Think about it. We have almost 5,000 members, and if everyone gave $5 a month, just think of the amount of money that would come in here, the things we'd be able to do, you know. But we get a very, very small percentage of people that really support us, and hopefully people will be moved to do something now, you know. So
absolutely. God bless you.
Okay. Thank you. You too. Okay, next individual. Let's see. Next caller looks like Mark from Wisconsin. Mark from Wisconsin, 608. Okay, last call for Mark, M-A-R-C, from Wisconsin.
Hi, it's Mark Edward. How are you doing today?
Good.
Well, first of all, thank you for doing what you're doing. And I just noticed when I was checking my emails to get the phone number that you do have a weekly newsletter now.
That's correct. We just started that this week, and yes.
Okay, and there's no Wednesday meeting or phone call this week?
Wednesday is going to be all leadership in a National Liberty Alliance is we're calling all leaders and anybody, every member, especially people who aren't leaders and want to be leaders. It's a leadership meeting. We're going to have it on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room, and we're going to be talking about where we're going, what we're doing, and trying to organize a little better. We'll still have our Tuesday night meeting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room, which is a one-hour course discussing and getting involved in learning to become administrators, working through the paperwork and learning about writs and how to write a writ and so on.
Okay. That kind of answers my question. Thanks, then, again.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next person. Whoop, I hit the wrong button. I apologize. Let me go back. Hang on a second. Q&A. All right, sorry about that. Star 6 to get back into the queue. I unfortunately hit the wrong button there. So let me take the next person. Star 6 to get back into the queue. Jan, go right ahead.
Jan over here in New Haven. How are you, sir?
Good. What's up, Jan?
Question. I've been seeing some things happen in the courts, and corruption just amazes me. The volume is kept down to really low within the court so that the court watchers can't really hear what's going on. How can we address that?
Well, that's why we say that people should get up, and when they come in as court watchers, they should get there and get right up into the front so they can hear and so on. But it is true. They shut the mics off. I've seen this all the time in the courts. We had one time, we had quite a few people. We filled the courthouse and had people piling almost out into the hall. And they even had to move us into a bigger room. And the people couldn't hear what was going on. And people were saying, hey, judge, can you turn the speakers on? They didn't do it. They wouldn't do it, okay? Because, right, they don't want everyone to hear all of the crime. They're criminals. Everything they're doing is violating people's right of due process, everything they're doing. The moment they have a hearing, they've violated people's due process. They have no authority to have hearings. That's not what the way courts work. So right away, it's not a common law court.
Another comment?
But you're right. They're criminals.
Another comment?
Yep, go right ahead. One more.
Called the court and inquired about recording the hearing. And he says, we don't do that. You can't do that. It's like, wow.
Well, bear in mind, every court hearing is recorded. They don't want you to know that. Goodness, it's been a while since I thought about this or talked about this. Maybe Gerard remembers or others. There is something to ask for, and you talk with knowledge of the fact that it's been recorded, and you can get the actual audio recording. I noticed
the master tape they have, which they record something.
Is that what it's called?
I think it's called.
Yeah,
the master
I remember
tape.
Going to a village court, okay, and getting into it with the judge, and then the judge says, "Hang on a minute, let's go in the back room. I want to talk to you." And he took me into the back room with the others, and then he was talking, and I realized that they had a recording going. He didn't want this on the recording, okay, and that's in a village court. So they probably all have it, but we do know that state courts, federal courts, they all have a master recording going. And, of course, they have the stenographer. But they don't like for you to do it because they plan on erasing a lot of this stuff. They cleanse the tapes, and sometimes they may wait even 6 months or a year before they cleanse the case. But they cleanse. They cleanse these court hearings because they're committing crimes, and they try to make it as good as possible for them not to be held accountable.
But they say you can't record.
That's the problem.
They say you can't record.
That's right. Well, you can record.
We got two Supreme Court cases that we use as court watchers that say that they have to let us record unless there's a real good reason for them not to. Like there was a case with a child in it or something, you wouldn't want personal information out. When it comes to a town coming after you or something, there's no reason to not record that unless they're doing crimes. And there's two Supreme Court rulings, one I think is out of Washington State, I'm not sure, that they have come to the conclusion that they cannot stop you from recording. So what you're supposed to do, though, is before the court, you're supposed to come in and say, I'm going to record. Here's the Supreme Court rulings that we're resting in. And see what the judge says at that point. Usually they yield. Now, I don't know if this judge will yield, but usually they yield.
Yeah, you know, the guy that was running our court watchers a while back, he had a lot of knowledge of this stuff, and he would, of course, notify the courts he was coming in and letting them know exactly what Gerard was said, that he's going to be recording, he's bringing the video equipment, so on and so forth. And he does it in writing. And that usually worked, not all the time, but usually did. And so we need to be teaching people that when we go into the courts, we need to get together. Maybe we'll write a paper on some kind of a form, put together a form of notification of recording in the court. But that requires us to have knowledge of time. I mean, you can't, all of a sudden we get word that someone needs help in the court. What's today? Today's Monday. Let's say they need to be there Wednesday or Thursday. There's a court hearing. We need more of the time than that. We need a week or two at least. If we know that people are going to court and they go to the court watchers and we put the word out early on to let people know to prepare their own schedules and then give them a reminder when we're close up, that will permit us to be able to, people who want to record, bring cameras in or something, to file the form to the court to notify the judge they're coming in. That's it. There's a lot of success that way, but not always.
If you got people coming in.
Okay, let us move on to the next call. Yeah.
You can tell the judge, that's okay if you don't want me to record, but I'm going to have 10 people here that are writing affidavits on this hearing and filing them.
That's the key. When you have people in there with moving pencils on paper, and especially if they've got IDs as a Judicial Oversight Committee, appointed or working with the grand jury, that's intimidating, okay? And whenever they write the affidavit, they need to get the affidavit to the individual whose case it is. And then, of course, if we're doing something where we need those affidavits, they would supply it to us. So, but in any event. Okay, let's move to the next person, next caller, Gary from Illinois.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, it's Pat, Northern New York here. I just had I've been dealing with some traveling issues in a local court up here, and we had our van taken from us about a year ago, and they pulled us over using emergency lights in a non-emergency situation, busted out my window, kidnapped me, stole my property. And then they wouldn't allow us, and they wouldn't allow me into the courts. At the time, I had a service animal, and they wouldn't allow me in the court, so I reported them to the Division of Human Rights, and they opened a case against them. And then they wouldn't even allow me on the second floor because I was handing out little mini constitution booklets, and they threatened me with trespass to be anywhere near the court. So I stayed away from the courts, and because of intimidation from other police officers and the sheriff and issues I had with the state police as well, I ended up just walking away from the whole situation and continuing ministry work that I was doing. And just kept traveling. So recently I was back up in this area, and back in August of this year, and I had a off-duty police officer claim that he identified me as the person they were looking for, and said that I had a warrant out for my arrest for failure to appear in court. So they charged me, they brought charges of failure to appear when they wouldn't allow me in the court, and then they set a ransom of $5,000 and had me held in the county jail for but the next court date was set for 15 days later. And I've already done a ton of paperwork. I paid over.
Are you still going into court now?
Yes, I'm still dealing with the courts, but the last they unlawfully pushed it to trial, to my objection and without my consent.
Are you looking for us to help you?
I'm looking to see how I can help make a change, and I'm just kind of sharing what currently happened
with
me.
Well, if you need to get out of your court, out of that court, we can do a habeas corpus and remove you from their jurisdiction.
Okay.
So if you want to fill out the paperwork for that, we'll help you there.
Okay, because I sent out, I had three witnesses go with me for the last three times, and they all filled out judicial complaints against the, you know, the acting judge, the administrator.
Work.
And, huh?
Yeah, that doesn't work. The whole system is corrupt. Even the judicial oversight committees that they have, I'm not aware of any of them that work.
There was about 12 different organizations that we reported the court to. And
look, we're the only ones that are going to be able to assist you in any way to deal with these problems, and we come in and we'll be relentless with them. And, you know, we're still learning, of course, and we're still, you know, we're having some success and we're having a lot of resistance, but I think a lot of this resistance is going to start to break away from us because they know we're onto something. They know what we're saying is true. They know we, the people, we are the law. We are the ones that have given the law, not them. And we've given authority for the lawmakers to legislate certain things and other things we haven't given them the authority, and that's where they've gone astray and are operating criminally, ultimately, under fraud.
Right.
And they know it. They know it. And it takes a little while for them to figure it out because, first of all, they don't read our paper at the beginning. Ah, these guys are crazy. You know? Now, it's always the same thing, and I see it in all the cases so far. All of a sudden, it's later, 20 days later, and we're moving to the next step on paperwork, and now they're reading the paperwork. Now they're analyzing it. They'll use words like we're analyzing, you know, we're looking at it, you know, we're studying it, and so on. So I think we're getting success, and I think we're going to get more and more success. And, again, if you need our assistance, out on our website on the right side, you'll see the frowny face instead of the happy face holding up a sign saying help. Click on that and then follow along whatever kind of case it is. It will tell
you.
Right.
I was kind of just trying to share a little bit of what I've experienced and gone through.
Mm-hmm. It's a horror story out there.
Yeah, so the whole thing about the trial was they had pushed it to trial. When I say it, I'm talking about the charges. They brought charges of unlicensed operation, no registration, no VINs, no proof of, you know, no insurance, just the standard, you know, the travel racket charges. And so
Hang on one second. Gerard, I'm getting beeps on my headset, so I may go dark for a minute. I got to change my headset, so listen to the call unless you may have to continue response. But go ahead, continue on.
Okay. And so basically I came across, I've been studying really in depth for the last 3 years, and I came across, I've actually been doing this for full time, the study, and I came across information based off of a lot of the charges that they're bringing against people who are just trying to travel in their common right-of-way. And I came across information called the Motor Vehicle Theft Prevention Act, and that led me down a rabbit hole of discovering that the VIN numbers, the titles, the registration, the plates, the whole process is all voluntary. And it actually explains it in their laws that if you don't want to participate in the program, you actually just remove the decals, remove the plates, and remove the stickers. And so I put it all into a document and highlighted it and underlined it and have been sharing that with people. And so I sent all this information with my affidavits of truth and fact and my writ of paper, my writ of, not writ of quo warranto, but my, I forget what the last one was, but I sent in a bunch of paperwork to the court, and basically demanded that they dismiss the charges for lack of merit and for lack of jurisdiction. And so I had previously done a bunch of paperwork that I filed in the county recorder's office that they charged me $650 to file. It was like three different documents. Some were accepting the oath of office of the sheriff and the district attorney. Others were just a public notice for public servants. And so I don't know why they charged me $650, but it was really, really expensive just to file some public notices. And so I paid under duress. And then I you know, put them on notice of that filing and the filing number. And then they said, well, we're going to move this to trial, and if the prosecutor's not here, we're just going to drop the charge. And I said, well, I don't consent to you making any decisions for me. We haven't even established jurisdiction. I don't even know what's going on. You know, nobody's telling me anything, and I'm being kept in the dark. And so they put you to the trial. You know, they threatened me if I wasn't going to be there, yada, yada, yada. So I showed up, and it was for completely different charges from, like, 2011 that had to do with, like, no seatbelt or some random, you know, ticket that had no standing or, you know, had no merit whatsoever and had just become defective for lack of prosecution. And they brought up some, you know, a couple, you know, a ticket, you know, some ticket for failure to stop at a stop sign and some other, like unlicensed dog ticket or something like that. Just some random charges for this trial, so I was totally unprepared. And so recently I paid $5,000 to be released from prison. So I paid $5,000. So after the trial, you know, one they dismissed, and two, they said that there was an $80 charge or something that had to be paid, and just, you know, all their rhetoric that they tell you. And so I went to the clerk's window, and I asked her, I said, well, I don't know what's going on, but when are we going to talk about my van that was stolen over a year ago? And when are we going to talk about the $5,000 that I recently paid to be released from jail? And she said, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, what do you mean you don't know what I'm talking about? She said, she just kept saying she doesn't know what I'm talking about. And I said, well, that's what this trial was supposed to be about. And I said, but you guys changed it, you know, last minute on me, like 2 minutes before we started. I was told it was just for traffic, and I thought that's what the only thing we were here for anyways. So I'm dealing with this, and I'm going to be going Wednesday afternoon with some more witnesses and my audio witness, which I call, you know, I call it an audio witness to the
right.
To that recording.
I'm just getting back online here. Gerard, I don't know if you've been listening, hopefully, and you've been responding to this gentleman, but we don't want to get too involved in court cases. I mean, a little bit of information. You know, we all know what a mess it is out there.
Yeah.
Gerard, do you want to respond? You're good, Gary.
I'm just trying to get to the point of I'm going to be going to get the money back and get the van back here soon. So I might be thrown in jail here soon, you know, depending on how it goes. So I just want to, you know, let you guys know that. And if I do, you'll probably get, you know, my wife will probably get a hold of you guys.
I'm sorry. I was muted trying to talk to you. Look at,
okay.
First of all, you're playing in their court, number one. I mean, I don't want to get into your case, but one of the problems you have is you're playing in their court. And the only advice I'd give you right now to save yourself a lot of trouble is to go and fill that intake form out with the affidavits and stuff. Now, if you think you're going to go to jail, yes, you need a next friend. You need to set that up now because then your wife can call and she can fill the paperwork out.
Well, he should set it up for us to do the habeas corpus to pull him right out of here right now before they even have the opportunity. Who put him in jail. And
that's
like
true.
You say, his wife should be set up to, if you don't complete it, or she had to continue it because they did put you in jail, at least then there's someone continuing. But you should do it now. If you get the paperwork in, it's potentially possible for anybody who's serious. You can get all the paperwork in easily in less than 24 hours. And if you could do that, we usually, at this point, we can respond to the papers and get things going within a week or two at the most.
Yeah, I sent that all the paperwork before, but I couldn't, for some reason the email kept bouncing it back, and I couldn't send it in. And this was before the court date actually came up. So
you were sending it to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org?
Well, whatever it says on the website.
How long ago did you fill out paperwork?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago? Okay, so that's fairly recent. It should have went.
Yeah, it kept bouncing back.
You must have written something wrong then, because we're getting an email, at intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. We are getting it.
Well,
there.
It kept saying that,
and we've got 140. We've got 148 cases, I believe, is the last I heard. And with that said, most of them are incomplete paperwork. We got a couple that we're moving on because we got all the paperwork, but it's just incomplete. And if you can get complete paperwork in quickly, we can respond quickly. And within a couple of weeks, we, at least at this point in time, unless 100 people all of a sudden get their paperwork in right, then we'll be backlogged a little bit.
Right. So, like everybody else is having the same problem, I'm dealing with corruption. So what's happened is they're pretending like they – because I asked them, I said, well, when's the next court date for the van? And they said, there's no next court date. I said, what are you talking – after I sent out a bunch of emails and a bunch of paperwork to different investigative agencies, like their superiors and all that kind of stuff, they're pretending like they have no idea what I'm talking about. So they have my van, they have $5,000 that we paid in cash, and they're pretending like they have no clue what I'm talking about. So that, and they told me there's no other court date. We don't know what you're talking about.
Well, make sure you get all that in your affidavit if you're going to have us help you. Okay?
Right, I got it all on recording. So I have three witnesses that filled out paperwork.
Right, but you have to put it into an affidavit, and preferably less than three pages. Less is more usually, but just be very specific. On or about this happened, that happened, as if you're telling a story. But anyway, we got to move on because we've been talking to you for quite some time. But we will help you if you get your paperwork in. If you're having a problem and it's bouncing back. Try to get a hold of other people, that we have national leaders there that you can give a call to. You can try to get a hold of Gary at nationallibertyalliance.org, and he'll make contact with Linda, and then Linda will then get in touch with you and help you to get your paperwork. But I don't know why you must be putting something in wrong, typing something in.
Maybe.
Spelling or putting a space or a hyphen or something.
One more thing for a tip on the Premier membership and stuff, the idea of not everybody being able to pay. I just wanted to give a little idea that I don't know if you guys thought of this or tried it, but you can also have like a referral thing if you can refer like five people or five working emails or five other, men or women in your community that might be interested in National Liberty Alliance, kind of thing. And that could be like a donation. It's, five more people that are potentially part of the
right. Well, all active members are really active and realize and are sharing this with other people, and we're gaining new members through that, of course. So that's a given. The more members we have, the more option or opportunity of gaining more monies in order to pay our bills. But I'm pretty sure we're going to pull that off from the Stop the Premier membership, because we just can't. I can't keep up on it to try to. We got so many people. I just can't get in there to push all these buttons and it has to be done. So it works great if everybody just did it through credit card. But then yet when the way we have it set up, what PayPal does on this particular part is you have to have a PayPal set up in order to do it. Where, if you're just doing a one-time donation, they don't require a PayPal. It could be any credit card. And that's a problem. And, they shouldn't do that, but they do that. They're trying to get more business, but in any event.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we appreciate the call. And if you want help, let us know and get a hold of one of the leaders. Go out to the directory and find somebody. Okay?
All right, we'll do. Thanks.
Okay? Fine. All right. Next person, 412, anonymous. Maybe you can give us your first name and your state.
Hi, this is Helena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Helena?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
Good.
I spent my $50 about two or three months ago now. I can't remember. Sorry, my computer froze and it just restarted. And then I don't understand. Then I never heard of anything from you guys unless I remember, oh, it's Monday. I've got to call in.
Well, we send out, we've been sending out emails, but I think the last month or so, I usually send out an email, but then sometimes I forget. I know the last 4 weeks or so, I haven't been sending any emails out, and that's why we had a meeting to set up a weekly newsletter, which starts off with, of course, telling people the meetings, the upcoming agenda, you know, what our calendar is, and what meetings are where, and links to get information on joining those meetings. So that'll be going out weekly now. So everybody will have that information, and hopefully we'll get more and more people participating. But we also give other information. So we update people in the different committees on what's going on and the help we need here or whatever it is there. And the courtroom observer stuff, some of that will go through that also on that particular
John, that's point, though. I don't know if I'm a member. I'm with the lady. I don't want to do the $5 a month thing. I did
right.
the $50, so I don't know if
right.
I'm Limbo
yeah, no.
Land.
Hold on. There is no requirement of money to be a member. All you have to do is look on the top and see if you're logged in. If it says log in, then you're logged out. You have to click on that and log in. When you join and sign up to become a member, you should have gotten a confirmation email, which then you would click a link in there, and then you'd come right on. And every once in a while, you know, your computer, your browser will lose the information, and you got to click on it and put yourself back in. But generally, if you're here often, you rarely have to sign in. But if you look up on the top right, you'll see log in. That means you're not logged in. Or log out, that means you're logged in. And if you have problems logging in, get a hold of Gary, G-A-R-Y, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, that's Gary at nationallibertyalliance.org. Just let him know what your problem is, and he'll assist you. He'll check to make sure everything's good and help you with changing your password if that's what you forgot, or whatever the case may be.
Well, no, I see, that's the problem, is I think this is probably a solution that maybe needs to be fixed, because I thought that's all I had to do to become a member. I never logged in, ever, didn't know it was a two-step process. So something is missing in between the $50 and saying, whoa, you need to log in,
Helena.
Well,
the donation is all on its own. In other words, it has nothing to do with becoming a member.
I think that's...
We don't require anybody to give us money to be a member. Membership
is free. I understand,
but
that might be a problem
yeah.
with your system, because I just thought automatically once I did that about two, three months ago, I thought, okay, that's it. And then
yeah.
I didn't hear anything, and I'm going...
Yeah, that's not the way it's set up. We're not set up that way. Because, look, when you become a member... We look to get your name, we look to get a phone number, an email address.
Put all that with my money.
And then to discover whether you want to be a county organizer or not, and, you know, different things that you have to, you know, answer questions. And,
I check my junk mail all the time. You're not in my junk mail. So if I would have received anything, I would have received it.
Yeah, but what you're thinking...
Another lady is having the same problem, and this gentleman was saying something sort of.
Right, hold on. What you're thinking is that when you gave the donation, you became a member. That's not true.
But that's your fault, because we don't know that there are. It's a two-step process, is what I'm trying to tell you. There are now three calls: a lady about an hour ago, this gentleman about 10 minutes ago, and now me having all the same sort of logistics type of questions, like. You know, what is this newsletter thing? And you have my name, address, and phone number. You have all of those things, and then there's another step. So it's not
well.
Joined
if you became a member, we have that information. If you just gave a donation, we don't have that information. The credit card information goes through. It doesn't come to us, though. It goes through PayPal. That's all private. We don't get that information.
Okay, but
I don't get that information.
And that's the problem. We don't understand that. I didn't understand that. The
right, well,
lady an
donation,
hour ago,
donation up on the top right side is exactly that, a donation. If you want to, if you look up on the top and you'll see either you log in or log out. If you have to log in, if it says log in up on the top right, then that means you're not logged in. And if you go to log in and you don't have a username and password, well, then you have to click on the button to become a member, to join. And then you go through the process of joining. You'll get an email confirming your email. You'll go into the email. You'll confirm it by clicking a link in there, and you'll be brought right to the website, and you'll be brought right into your personal information. And if you want to make changes, you can make changes. But now you'll be logged in.
Mm-hmm. I'm just not so sure that there's a glitch in the...
That's the way all websites work that way. I mean, I'm not aware of anything where you go click the donation button and you go through the membership that way, unless they're charging for a membership. We don't charge for membership. Ours is absolutely free. We don't charge for our civics course. You just have to be a member to get to the civics course. You can't take the civics course unless you get a username and password and sign in.
I'm an engineer, and I'm pretty logical, very logical, build bridges. So somehow there is a step missing. That's all I'm saying. And if I missed it, and several other people seem to have said the same things, if you confirm...
Well, no, nobody said the same thing you're saying right now tonight. Two people had two different situations, but not what you're saying. Look, at every website you join, you have to get a username and password. You have to log in. And there's a login button on the top right side, log in or log out. If you're logged in, it'll say log out. You know you're logged in. If you're not logged in, it'll say log in. And every website that has a membership is the same way. You click on the button, you create a username and password, and in our case, we ask certain questions, and you can volunteer for certain things in that process. And now once you're in, now you can take the free civics course. You will probably won't even see, I don't even know if you see the free civics course. Well, you might see it, and when you click on it, it'll tell you you have to sign in, and if you're not a member, it won't. So you have to become a member to take the civics course. Yeah.
I want to dovetail in here. Look, when you pay a bill with PayPal, not only don't we get the information when you put your information in, it would be illegal for us to collect it. And what PayPal does is it removes you off the site to their site. And it confirms
right.
it. So there's no way you could think that we're getting that information. It even tells you PayPal keeps your information secure. So if you think that we got your information because you put it in there with the credit card, well,
but if you send the thank
you
letter,
don't understand the process then.
Along with the thank you letter for thank you for sending the $50, then there usually is a click saying to confirm that. Or that you do want to get newsletters?
No. What happens is, you see, when I set that all up with PayPal, because I used my PayPal card to do that with, when I set it all up, one of the options is to do an automatic thank you letter. So an automatic thank you letter goes out. Actually, it's not really a letter. What it is basically when you finish, you're doing what you're doing, you go to a page, and the page tells you thank you for donating.
I've never
seen a website where you click on donation to join. It's just I've never seen that. So we don't do it
Can
either. I mean, you have to
comment.
Join as a member. Yeah, please.
Can I make a quick comment? Yeah, if you would just have the lady give Gary a call in the morning, he can take care of that in a minute and get her all signed up.
Gary,
I wrote Gary's number down. 3 months ago,
nice.
So I don't have Gary's number anymore.
Okay, do you have a PIN?
Yes, I do.
248-980-6786, and he can fix you right up.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Okay,
thanks
for the
great.
Call.
Thanks.
All right, we'll take our next caller. Dr. Fred from California, is that you?
It's me. How you doing?
How you doing?
I'm good, John. I just wanted to briefly mention that I saw the paperwork went out today. I got a copy of it. Obviously, they'll default, and I just want you to make sure my admonition to you guys is to please follow up, because if you don't, the BOP takes issues with the inmates, and I don't want them to be hanging out with their kit in the ringer.
We'll be on top of that. I'll take a look at that in the next 2 days, see where we're at and what steps to do.
Make sure I reviewed the paperwork. It looks good. It looks official. It looks like it should work. But we know that they'll ignore it. And when they default, it's not if they default, when they default, just please follow up. And I won't talk to you again for another week. And just to make mention, you know, I'm so adamant to be behind you. And the Hebrew word batah, I have great trust in you. I'm pressing into you, and I believe you can get things done. But we got to be pedantic about what we do because they take every little thing that we do that we take for granted. They take it. They make it an issue. And as I said in my mail to you, they have ways you haven't begun to think of, that they can make your life miserable, and they do.
Right.
And they do it deliberately.
Well, we realize that. We realize that. And,
all right. God bless you.
You're in our... one of the things is that there's safety in numbers, and there's a lot of it. And but you know what? We like I had told you earlier, or this I think it was last week, as I had mentioned, you know, we just were not organized well enough to be able to handle the load that we had going, and the people weren't prepared, they weren't trained enough. Now we're at that point, we're there. Now we're charted out, and we're working through a process after so many days, we make the next move, and so on and so forth, and we're working through that right now. So, we're going to be on top of this, and we understand it's an uphill battle. In your case, particularly, it's a very difficult one because they've already had them incarcerated for 10 or so years, and it's really hard for them to let go because now they know they got a problem. When they have to let someone out of jail because of this after 10 years and they see the paperwork we've done, they know they have a problem.
And not only that do they know they have a problem, but they know there will be recourse. If you go away, I've said to a doctor just a week or two ago in a certain situation, I said, go away mad or go away not mad, but just go away, because you're not meeting my best interest. And the government will say to you, if you go away, just go away mad, but just go away. Well, when people obviously don't go away and are seeking recourse or seeking to use their system or a system to get back at them, they have ways. That's all I can't.
We understand. Yeah. We don't need to get that deep in that conversation.
Yeah. Okay, praying for you.
But they also know at this point who we are, that we're not messing around. They know there are lots of people involved. And, this thing, it's too late for them to stop it. They're not going to take out a couple of people. This thing's going to stop.
My admonition is simply just don't drop the ball right now because they are threatening the boys. I'll be back again in a week. And if you need me during the course of the week, you have my numbers, my email, my everything. And you have all of my people that work with me to get things done. So you're in our prayers, mainly that's what we do. And again, I submit Isaiah 54:17. No weapon formed against us is going to prosper. We know that, and we have that as an eternal promise from an eternal God. And that's all we have to concern ourselves about.
And that's the key right there. You see, this is all up to God to take care of this stuff. But we just have to do the right thing. That's our job.
God bless you and yours. Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. You too. Thank you. Okay. Let us take our next caller. Let's see. Who is this? Marina from Connecticut.
No, it's Tammy. I'm sorry.
Oh, Tammy. Okay. Well, you got a Marina up there.
Okay. Well, it's certainly wonderful to hear everybody tonight. And John, as always, you really give a lot of encouragement, and the gentleman just previously speaking was quite profound with, that we really don't need to worry about these things. It's really in the Lord's hands. But I just wanted to mention that, one of the callers stated that a speaker, the speakers coming on the show, sometimes I feel like you're on seven nights a week, and I'm thankful to God that, that you give so much of yourself for so many people. It means a lot. But I think a speaker every now and then could kind of give you a chance to, hear some other people that are out there trying to help in the same capacity, and maybe, you know, where there are two, more shall gather there as well. And I have a woman named Catherine Albrecht. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she is a she's a syndicated radio host who does she's a privacy expert and how our privacy is really being taken from us. So her name is Catherine Albrecht, which is A-L-B-R-E-C-H-T.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
And she's from New Haven. I'm sorry, not New Haven, but New Hampshire. So she's talking a lot about how all our privacy is being taken from us, and just like the gentleman who in my opinion, two callers previously, was the one who had the vehicle, the van problems, you know, his case sounds to me like it's going to go right to the Patriot Act problem. And he's really endangered, and I hope he takes your advice by filling out the habeas corpus, because once you put it in handwriting, you know, the power of the pen is really a lot more than the voice sometimes. So I hope he takes your advice on that. And I also want
to
say...
Yeah, he does have to be concerned, and he should do a habeas corpus, you know, have us do a habeas corpus for him, but go ahead.
I agree, because... The problem that I'm seeing a lot here in Connecticut is, you know, they've got all this new technology they want everybody to go under. And not everybody, you know, there's different generational gaps. There's the blue-collar workers who are disrespected now, and all these white-collar people, you know, with all the technology, they don't have any patience, time, or they don't want to lose their high-dollar wages and their pensions. And I think a lot of the problems that we're having is the people who built this country are, you know, falling into, you know, there's no jobs because of NAFTA and other reasons. And all those people did earn a wage, and they did earn pensions, and they're all being robbed at the lower end when these people are found into the street, and all they knew how to do is work. So they don't know how to accept, you know, they want to give handouts, and they want to make people believe that, you know, they'll put somebody in jail because it's $35,000 per capita before they help somebody find a job because of they can't make a child support payment or something. So a lot of it's going to, you know, the jail people. You know, the prison system in Connecticut is a major corporation here. And as a victim of
right,
it myself...
Right, they're making money on us lots of different ways, absolutely. The courts, every time they incarcerate someone, there's a way for them to make money. The Federal Reserve has set all this stuff up, ultimately. You know, it's just nothing but a sham. Again, it's all fiction. It's all, corporatism is exactly what it is. But as far as, again, guests, we're already entertaining that idea and thought. But, again, they have to be compatible with us, and they have to have a purpose within our plan. And definitely certain people, which we talked about, Mr. Bodnarik, Michael Bodnarik, definitely falls into our plan here and the criteria. Again, Bill Thornton is another individual, and... you know, with common law lectures, and of course, we have Common Law by Brent Winters. Brent Winters is an individual I'd love to be able to have on and ask some questions, or just let him talk to us about his knowledge of common law and history. All these people are great to have on. Again, there are certain people that could be problematic for us because their strategy or philosophy. We also want to be careful not to get lost in teaching people about the fiction and the problems and how things work. That has already people worked on it on their own. And we do have a lot of information on videos up on our website already. There's lots and lots of videos that we have. And even our civics course, you know, how we got here, how these problems arose, how did America get to the condition she is in? We have a lot of videos that is part of our course that explains that right on through the process. But we don't like to spend too much time on those things, but people do need to be, up to date on what's going on. Well, not necessarily, but they need to understand the problem to some degree. We agree on trying to get speakers for education in different areas, and we'll see how things go. You know.
Well, the thing of it is, just like you stated, I'm not sure if you homeschooled your
children. Hold on one minute. Gerard, by the way, are you ready to pick up on this in a couple minutes,
yeah,
Gerard?
Yep.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Finish
okay.
up, as you were saying.
So I'm not sure if you homeschooled your children, but you stated that, you know, you didn't put your children in the regular school system.
That's right.
And there's a lot of people that might consider that off the grid, and I think
mm-hmm.
off the grid people are being targeted. And, you know, this is what
Absolutely.
I'm trying to say is that all this stuff we're all being, you know, forced into something that, well, our conscience is telling us it's not a good idea. In other words, even the Real ID Act here in Connecticut, supposedly you're supposed to be able to have the choice to get the Real ID or just a state identification. However, they're just only pushing and putting out there about the Real ID information, which wants, you know, if you're married, you got to give your you know, you got to submit documents that I really feel makes you more of a target than someone that's protected. And as an example of that,
well, we are,
you know,
pushing back. You've been reading our papers, I presume. We've got 10 papers we filed in 94 federal courts, and we are pushing back. We're letting them know we know what they're doing, and we lay it out on the paperwork. We lay it out. We submit it to the courts. We file it, and they are not sending it back. And if they do, we're going to go after the clerks.
And just to let you know that here in the state of Connecticut, let's say if a person needs food stamps, and a lot of people do need them, and I know people are hungry because I'm an advocate. They're actually letting an organization, you know, do their yearly review of it, a second and third party. So that's a breach of information right there. They're letting the United Way handle, you know,
everything
it's all breaching.
Everything they do is a breach of information. Everything they do is really a brief of contract with the people, and the contract is the Constitution. And they violate it day in and day out. Once the court opens its doors and the judge calls in session, he's already breaking the law. Every day, all day long, in thousands of courtrooms across America, they're violating the law. They're violating people's unalienable right of due process by not giving them due process and hijacking them into foreign courts, which is exactly where they're at. They're in foreign courts. They're not, certainly not in American courts. And
Agreed.
That's what people need to understand. You got to get out of those courts. And you do that by going to the same buildings and just bringing the right process before, and then deal with those people for violating your right of due process when they try to hijack your court back into what they've set up. You got to go after them. And if
I
you don't
agree.
Go after them, you're not going to win.
And just like the gentleman who's got this van problem, it's so important that he will follow through with this habeas corpus because, you know, he said that he's done everything, and nothing mattered because...
Well, there's only two things he can do, and only two things. There's no one out there that will help them except us. I'm not aware of anyone
exactly.
else that has the ability to help them. Okay, that's number
you
one.
You all help
but
me. You all
only,
help me, so I know that.
There's only two things that he can do, okay? And number one, he can make a federal case out of it because the moment he walked into that court, they violated his right of due process. But he needs to understand that and understand jurisdiction and how it works, and I don't think he does understand those
exactly.
things. And that's going to take time. So the only other option he has left is us having the habeas corpus done. So I'm sure he'll figure out what he's got to do, and he'll do it. And, you know, hopefully he'll do it before he goes to jail.
I'm concerned for someone like him because he is an off-the-grid person, he sounds like to me, and I don't think he really wants to be an off-the-grid person. It's just that people are going by their conscience, and, you know, the good Lord is on our conscience a lot of time, and it's not, you know, we're good people. We just don't think that.
Yeah.
We don't think
when we just want to be left alone, and the moment we start telling them we just want to be left alone and start taking actions to prevent ourselves, to make sure that we're left alone, all of a sudden we're pulling ourselves off the grid, so to speak, at that point. Because they just don't want to leave us alone. They just won't leave us alone. They just won't just go away. Leave me alone.
I think
all
this technology and corporations are just pushing it. Just like the children now have to, you know, have to have a hand scan to go through the lunch line. I mean, things are getting a little out of control, and parents are standing up for their rights. And otherwise it'll be what they call... Some call it as implied consent. That's why people have to exercise their rights. So that's, if someone's going to go along with it, they'll just say that that's, you know, kind of deceiving people. So I just want to say again, thank you for the show. I thank you for National Liberty Alliance. I know you've helped me out a great deal. I'm still trying to get remedy for my situation because I'm still walking everywhere I go, and I have 15 more years to work, and I feel like they're trying to force people into Social Security, and I don't want that. So, but thank you again, and have a wonderful evening.
Okay, appreciate the call. Thank you. All right, Gerard, you want to take it over? You got the button.
Yeah, I got it. Hey, John.
And I'm going to go and upload those two papers while you're talking. But go ahead. What do you want?
Also, I don't know. I was made aware that there's a new page on our site, on elected official status page. Have you seen that? Where they're listing out all the elected officials in the United States, names, emails, and all. And JP wants to make a call out that if people go to that page and they happen to live in a state that's not completed and they have the information, that they should give that to us. We need help with that. Okay? I don't know.
I'm not familiar with what's going on.
You'll have to go out and look at it. But there is a page called Elected Official Status Page.
Under what tab?
You know what? I don't know. I can put it in your. It says sheet-1.
Should be under political, maybe.
Huh?
Should be under political tab.
It's in the directory.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
It's in the directory. I'll send you the link to it, John. All right? And anyway, he asked, you know, he says he needs help. You should go out and look at it because you might not have seen it yet. This was something that's been done while you were busy doing other stuff. So there it is there. Maybe you should take a look at it. Maybe next week you can announce it better than I just did. Okay?
Okay.
Very good. Let me get back to my board page.
Well, by the way, it looks like a test page.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay, so then it's...
Maybe. I don't know. It just looks like it, because you got nationallibertyalliance.org, and it's a test page, it looks like.
So maybe it's
okay,
not...
Okay, well, I'll figure out what's going on. I don't know, so...
Okay.
I'll have to talk with Gary about it.
Yeah. Okay. The next caller is Scott from South Carolina. You've been unmuted.
Hey, thank you. Hey, I just have a quick question. This is more of a philosophical question, and it's also a constitutional question. By the way, as far as the cameras in the court, you know, getting written permission, you'd have to have the cameras in the court, and you can't get past the sheriffs at the door. But anyway, my question is, now, I heard John talking earlier, and he was saying that if, you know, you injure somebody, you go to court, and you get a restitution. Now, has any person since 1776 had the right to go up and precipitate violence on another person when that other person has shown no aggression toward that person? And I would say the answer is no, they do not have that right. All right, and since our government is for the people and by the people, we facilitate rights to the government to, you know, deem as they use necessary. We never had the right to lay our hands on another person. And yet, how can they say that we gave them the right to a government that we created to lay their hands on us? Like the case in South Carolina here, where I live, with the girl that the cop threw across the floor. You know, something in that manner. I mean, yeah, she was wrong, I agree. But I think that the way that they're doing everybody now, and it's not just in the schools, it's out all over. But do they have the right to come up and lay their hands on you when you've committed no crime and you've shown no aggression? And the answer is no, they don't. How can they have that right when we never had that right to give them? And they only have the rights that we give them, the government.
Yeah, see, the government even doesn't have any right at all. I mean, really, even to punish somebody, it's supposed to be a jury of your peers before they take away any of your rights as punishment. Now, what you're talking about is a police action.
you know, where he's trying to stop somebody in the commission of a crime. They're never look at. They can only use deadly force if they're presented with deadly force. This is a police officer, you know, and he's not supposed to use undue physical restraint if it's not necessary. So you're right. I mean, when somebody hasn't done anything except for with their mouth, look at, cops are supposed to take psychological exams. You should be able to cuss and swear and say anything almost to a police officer. And, I mean, he could even arrest you, but he doesn't have to, depending on what's going on. But that doesn't give him a right to beat you up. If he says, I'm going to arrest you now because you didn't leave the area, you know, we have a complaint from the landowner, the business owner, you were to leave, and you disobeyed my order to leave, so now I'm going to arrest you. Please put your hands behind your back. And then if you don't put your hands behind your back and he has to restrain you, and then, of course, you know, the harder you fight, the harder he fights. But that's the way it's supposed to go. They're not supposed to just grab people and throw them across the floor and treat us like animals. I mean, if they're going to do that, then they should issue them cattle prods. It's safer. You know what I mean? I mean, they give them tasers now and they kill people with it. But no, look, everybody's disgusted with all this violence, you know? And I know, unfortunately, everybody is. And it's all over the place. But it's not every cop, and it's not all of them. And you know, for them, you know, when you get some, that cop that you're talking about was 10 years a police officer, you would think that he had it under control. I see it more with young guys that get out and they're hungry and they want to go. And don't forget, they're training them more like military than they are like police. And so, you know, when you train a Marine to go take something and kill, that's what he is. He's a killer. You train him to be a killer. Well, that's why you can't militarize the police, because they're not supposed to be killers. They're supposed to be keepers of the peace. And the best place that you can see where the peace is kept is if you look at some of these English bobbies with their nightsticks and things going on. Those guys are experts at using psychology and stuff at keeping the peace. So instead of disarming the people, maybe the police need just billy clubs, you know. But, you know, I mean, there's guns in England now. They've disarmed the people, but the criminals have them. And the cops have sticks. Of course, now they got all these alphabet agencies that have guns, so now they got guns back on the street. But, I mean, you really got to look at the way the English bobbies handle things. And, you know, they're good with their sticks, but they're better with their heads and their voices. And that's what's not happening today. You know, you get these young guys that are all jacked up on steroids, and they're like going to war. They can't wait to get their first, you know, kill, so to speak. So that's a problem, and it has to stop. And that's part of making it stop is by the people holding the public officials to accountability. Listen, that cop, they did fire him, and I mean, he did have a show of support from some of the students, but that's because they're brainwashed enough, they don't even know what their own rights are, and they're probably friendly with him, they see him every day. But the fact of the matter is, you know, he's personally liable, and that's what they understand. When you bring them a tort in and you make them personally liable, that's what fixes all that. Because, you know, if they keep having an immunity, which, you know, when they act outside of the law, under color of law, they no longer have the immunity that they would have, you know. And I mean, it's a whole other discussion of whether or not they're a constitutional police force in the first place, you know. I don't know if he was a sheriff or he was just a hired gun for the school. But, you know, they have less power and less rights than the deputies and the sheriffs do. Because
I can tell you, he was the deputy sheriff, and that's the reason he was fired. If he would have been a police officer, a resource police officer, you know, that worked for the city, that wouldn't – I seriously doubt if he would have been fired.
Would have just said, he was doing his job.
Yep. We found that he was perfectly within department, you know, rules and regulations. And
they're a corporate agency with corporate policies, and that's a problem. And the only ones who are going to take them to task is people like us that stick to the Constitution and the common law. And they can't answer those questions, and that's why they're always defaulting, because to answer the questions would be to admit that they're not constitutional. So basically, that's the answer to hold their feet to the fire, you know.
Right.
And the other thing they understand is public outcry.
I'm sorry, what?
I said, but I'll get off here. I'll let other people speak. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, your point's well taken, and we are addressing some of that out there. You know,
we never have the right to give them to go up and precipitate violence on somebody for no reason whatsoever. I mean, just
absolutely,
because they're holding camera or
not.
Something like that.
And if you and really, their policies don't state that they do. No way. I mean, even their corporate policies don't state that. Because if their corporate policy said that they could put injury on somebody who did nothing, you could sue them just over the writing of what they're writing in their corporate policy. If anybody finds a policy that says that they can arbitrarily, you know, just start beating on somebody for no reason, right there, that's a lawsuit, because what it does is it incites the officers to break the law, you know? So I don't think you'll find it in writing. I think it's just, it's an unwritten, an unspoken, the big blue wall of silence, But there's a lot of cops out there that are good and they're doing a good job. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be a police officer in today's world. Really, really, really wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either.
Because it's got to be so hard, that fine line that you gotta walk. It's really terrible. Anyway, thank you for that, and we'll go on to the next person. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Pennsylvania Michael, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, Gerard.
Hey.
Hey, it's Mike in Pennsylvania. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I had a question about my matter, if you don't mind. We did the habeas corpus back in May.
Well, I can't get back into it too deep, but...
Right. I just wanted to know if the...
Yeah, just let you know, we're working on your paperwork right now. Maybe I'll give you a call during the week if we have any questions, but we're moving it to the next step on yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I tried calling you. I know you guys are busy and everything, and I tried calling you a couple of times. I'm glad I got to talk to you, though.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll pull it back to Gerard, but just to let you know, we're looking at your paperwork right now. I was looking at it over the weekend, and we're going to move it to the next step this week, I believe, on you.
Okay, yeah, if you can, please give me a call, because that's going to be back, that hearing's on the 20th or something.
Okay, yeah, we'll try to get it done as quick as we can. So,
okay, yeah, let me know, get me up to date. I appreciate it, John. Thank you very much.
Okay, right. Thank you, Michael. Hey, just want to say something with these cases that we're on, and we're kind of getting into the same stage of the game with a lot of people because of the way things worked out. And I'm noticing a pattern with these municipalities and different things. You know, like John said tonight, he put it very well. They get the paperwork. They don't read the paperwork. They steamroll you. They do stuff. They even do stuff after they defaulted on the habeas corpus. They're still moving ahead, and then all of a sudden one of the lawyers reads the paperwork and he goes, oh no, this was totally illegal, we were defaulted, we didn't answer the paperwork, what are we going to do? Then they start backing up, and it's happened on more than one occasion. And even Dr. Fred there, what he says about, they're going to harass his boys and stuff, one of the ways that you know that you're having an effect is when they start those scare tactics, when they start telling you, you're messing around with that sovereign citizens group, and they're in for trouble. That's all baloney. Look, they tell them, oh, they're being investigated. Yeah, that's right. We've been investigated 10, 12, 20 times, and nobody's ever been arrested because we're not doing anything illegal, because we're using constitutional, words of our forefathers. And when they leave, they say, we don't see anything wrong here, because there is nothing wrong, And so that's misinformation, I mean, they ask us, are you going to arrest judges? And we tell them, no, we're going to make you arrest them. We're going to give you the charges. You're going to arrest them, and that's the answer they get. So don't be scared when they start this crap. And listen, if anybody's getting beat on or anything like that, if they think they can do that and get rid of it, their phone lines will never rest, because we'll end up putting a court watchers thing. The jail will be called. The judge will be called. We'll put calls in until they go crazy. And that's how you handle that. And people that are in that area should be the first callers. But we can do a nationwide call to protect somebody in jail by bringing those kind of actions to the forefront, so that it's very uncomfortable for them. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead to who's next here?
Minnesota Larry. Thank you, Michael. Okay, Larry, you're on.
Hello.
Go ahead, I hear you.
Okay. I didn't hear you there for a minute. Well,
yeah, I
don't have a question. I have two comments.
Okay.
One as far as constitutional speakers. You may wish to look into Chris Ann Hall. Chris Ann is one word.
I love Chris Ann. I know her.
You know her?
Oh, she's excellent. She's an excellent constitutional lawyer, if you want. And,
yes.
I've used her stuff, you know, for other people. I've used it for my congressman here who was denying the NDAA, and she did some really wonderful stuff on that. And I sent him her videos. I mean, he didn't even know what to say. He was stuttering so bad. But Chris Ann is very good. Like John says, we have to be careful who we put on. But I tell you what, everything I've seen of Chris Ann, she's very pure. You know what I mean? As
yes.
far as constitutional. I don't know if she knows us and she knows our stuff or what she thinks about us. I can't imagine her finding any fault with us, though. You know, and she's always, look at anybody that knows her should invite her to a call and let her listen, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she, how can we invite her to come speak on this call when she doesn't know what we're about? She should listen to us and then make a decision, you know what I mean? And look at Chris Ann,
she is all over the internet. She's on Facebook, she's on Twitter, she's
oh,
on YouTube.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
has books. She is very easy to contact. You can go to chrisannhall.com and you can contact her and ask her to review some of your materials, what you're about, and you would like to have her as a speaker. Just point blank.
Yes, and our membership should do that, too. We don't normally go out wooing people like that. We like our members to bring them in for us. You know what I mean? We don't want, you know, we would like them to introduce her and let her see what we're out, you know, and then we would talk to her, you know, and interview her before we had a thing. Look, at Chris Ann is probably a real good candidate to get on, I would think, if we can get her attention. You know, it's hard for us to go to people. It's easier if they come to us. You know, and I mean, look at our members can bring them in, you know, and they can say, look, at we're loyal members of National Liberty Alliance. We think you two would do good together, and let her go through the site and look at it, you know. I mean, Chris Ann has a lot of YouTube. I understand that. I don't know that she has a website, though, does she?
Yes, she does. ChrisAnnHall.com. K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E Hall, H-A-A-L-L, and .com. It's all one word,
well,
Chris Ann Hall.
She's got an email there. I, you know, we can send her a URL, invite her to the site in an email, see if she's willing to come, you know what I mean, if she'll respond. You know, I'm sure she gets a lot of noise, where, you know, at the level that she's at, you know what I mean?
Well, she just released a video with a 16-year-old, and she seemed very proud that a 16-year-old would invite her to be a speaker, and the 16-year-old was interested in moving on the Constitution. She seems very, very committed.
Well, that's good. We need 16-year-olds, and that age group is the one that we should be targeting, because they're the up-and-coming millenniums, and, you know, we're moving out. We're going, more of us are dropping dead every day. I hate to say, we're at that stage. So it's up
yeah,
to
I'm
us
66, so I got an idea what you're talking about.
Yes. Gets closer every year. We have to bequeath our knowledge on the millennials coming up, because look at you figure that somebody that's in their 20s today or actually maybe even later than that, like look at when was 9/11. The people that were born after 9/11, they think that the Patriot Act and the NDAA is normal. All their life they've grown up with that garbage.
Yeah.
You know, they don't remember, you know, what we remember, you know, the old Westerns and John Wayne and all that patriotism and stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, you know,
really
the thing is that I'm 66, and I look back at my education, and we still had civics in school then.
That's what you didn't have. That's what they did.
While they put the Constitution before us, it was something education trampled on, because they went right over that just as slick as could be. they talk of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and I'll bet you that there's not one people in a million in America that understand life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and what they mean. They don't understand the word liberty, what it means. They don't understand rights, property. Now, you can't have property without rights, and you can't have rights without property. You know, I mean,
exactly.
And all the essentials have been robbed.
Well, you know what? It's been a long, long time. I found an English book that my mother used as a child. I mean, she died when she was 89, and that was a few years ago already. And that English book had everything in it that you could have. It was unbelievable. They had legal terms in there. They had stuff that the average college student doesn't know. And this was just to teach English.
Do you know the name and author of that book?
What's that?
Do you know the name and author of that book?
Well, I have the book here someplace, and it's unbelievable the education they were getting in the 40s. With that kind of education, you could actually go into court and write a paper. You would know what an affidavit is. There isn't a high school student probably around that really knows how to do an affidavit. They would teach them the matter.
How many high school students have heard the word?
Well, that's even going one further. You're right. It gets worse every year. And so it's up to us to bring that back into them. You know, even if you didn't even know any of that, the very least we got, I mean, you and me, the very least we were got if we were complete doomcobs and didn't learn anything in school, you got this idea that you were free. And even if it was a lie, you believed it. And that's what's been holding us together right now so far.
Yes, it is.
We still get here tonight and talk the way we're talking is because we believe we're free.
And they haven't had the balls to tell us we're not free.
Well, they also don't have our guns yet. That's another problem. So between the two of them, we can still do this. And look at Scalia. When Kennedy made that decision, Kennedy and Roberts kind of rolled over on us. He basically said it's up to the people now. Basically what he was saying, it's up to the militias now, kind of, sort of, you know what I mean? And
yes,
look,
yes, he did.
We only need a couple of people like Scalia to stand up and say the right thing because, look, he has the authority and the stature in that court. Just like last week I said, you know, the New York court gave us this case, Hughes versus whatever, and she said that this case proves that common law has been abrogated. And when I read it, I read the judge's dissent, the judge's opinions, and the dissenting opinion of the three judges or the four judges that dissented, they let one judge write it, and it was so good. It was so good that it made the other five judges that voted, you know, for it as a Supreme Court decision treasonous. They wrote it so good. And our response back is National Liberty Alliance, the people, we the people agree with those three judges and the rest of you are in treason. And the people have spoken. You see, we have the authority to speak like that. And they're not used to that. You know, look at the court steamrolls us when we go in. You know what we do? We steamroll them back. That's where we are. We are the people. We are above them. We are their masters. They are our servants. And that's how we have to talk to them.
You
now,
say we are the people.
I'm not talking about being disrespectful. I'm talking about speaking with authority.
You say we are the people. What are we the people?
I don't know. What are we the people? We're the nation. What do you mean?
Well, no. What nation are you talking?
Oh, wow.
We have 50 nation states. The United States is not a nation.
Right.
It is not a nation.
Right. That's right. It's that every state, and, look, every governor's a president. I understand that whole thing with states' rights, and I understand
we
lost that in the Civil War.
We the people today are the posterity of those that existed in 1776.
Right. Well, and there's not much of that left, let me tell you what.
Oh, yes, there is. There's a bunch of us. I did years of genealogy. There is a bunch of us out here, and it has flourished. The 14th Amendment has beaten America to death. They first created the Vindication Act the day before the 13th Amendment, and it's also termed the Civil Rights Act. And then they created the 13th Amendment, which said involuntary servitude shall not exist. Well, then they created that 14th Amendment. Now, if you read that 14th Amendment, that 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, or subject to the jurisdiction of. When I was born on Minnesota, one of the 50 nations, one of the 50 nation states. I was not born in the United States, so I was not subject to the jurisdiction of. I was not a United States citizen.
Well, look, there's nothing different going on that back then that's going on today. Look, they had the plans all set before the ink was even dried on the Constitution.
Oh, yeah, 100 years before that.
And that's right. And so they put it in place. And look, 9/11 happened, and what happened the next day, the Patriot Act, which was, I forget how many thousand pages long, was there. They had it prepared ahead of time, just like they have everything else prepared ahead of time. And so we have to be aware of that, and we have to understand that this is the enemy that we're fighting. And
we also have to understand, as written in the 1732 English lawyer, constitution means commission. Constitutioned means commissioned. It is just a commission, like our military officers. It's a set of orders that they contract to.
Right. Yeah,
and it's not marching papers for us. It's marching papers for them. That Constitution is nothing to me. But when they sign on the line, I can hold them to it because it is only about them. And as far as rights and even the Bill of Rights, all of that stuff, that they're marching orders. That's not mine.
Yep,
we were all kings and queens, 1776, 1787. We were all kings and queens. And only a few people voted for that Constitution.
Well,
I'm gonna
leave you with a saying that John says. Look, think free, act free, and be free. That's the answer to all that. And that's what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. So, look, I want to move on because we got a couple people left that I don't want to leave them hanging. You know,
very good.
I got a quest to get this queue down. Thank you very much. Okay, next looks like Utah Steve.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I got a friend that wants to join the National Liberty Alliance, but they're on disability, so. Are they not capable of participating in this because they're like a ward of the state, or would you know that? Or
they're on disability, and that's not an impediment. You think that's an impediment somehow?
Well, it's a contract, I guess, with the government to where they're paying your disability. She was just curious.
No. Look at you know, your disability and disability is an insurance that they've billed us for, and we can't even get into those questions. But anybody on disability certainly has a right. Look at, if you're on disability, you still have all your rights. It doesn't mean that you can't do it. The only ones that we don't want as actual members. Are like bar attorneys because they have an oath to a foreign power. You know,
okay.
What I mean? So, you know, being on disability, I mean, my goodness, probably half the nation's on disability. I don't know. But you know what I mean? It's not,
yeah.
It doesn't,
right.
I don't see it as an impediment to being a juror or anything else. You know?
So
I mean, when, yes.
When
now, look,
with
if
their
you
sovereignty,
are going to vote on the Constitution, now Bob Schultz has a suit because he doesn't want any government employees or anybody getting a check from the government or anybody involved in the government where they're depending on them in any way to rewrite the Constitution. And I mean,
yeah,
that makes sense because look, if you're going to rewrite the Constitution, you're going to make sure you rewrite yourself money, right?
You're right.
So that's a problem that I do sympathize with. But as far as participating in anything like this or anything else, being on disability is probably a far cry from anything that, you know, you can even consider
Look, you don't take an oath when you're on disability, do you?
No.
You know?
Not that I'm aware of.
Anyway, the short answer is it shouldn't matter. You know, we don't make that distinction, and they shouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Is that a good answer? Is that
that's kind of what I thought, but I wanted to just make sure with you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Good day.
Thank you. Yep. Okay. Looks like Lily is up, if that's right.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? Good.
I've been last week I sent out a package to the our local sheriff, Lori Smith. I included my letter and the NLA open letter to the sheriff, as well as the writ of mandamus to the sheriff. I sent it by certified mail. And so far, I haven't heard anything from the sheriff. So I would like to invite John to see if he could contact Lori Smith and talk to her about, you know, common law and also my situation with CPS taking my children. They took my children without a warrant. Then they issued the warrant one day after they took my children. And then the warrant was recalled by the judge. And this judge has no oath of office.
Jeez.
But they're still holding my kids. So I need help here.
You really need to fill an intake form out and do the habeas corpus. You got to get all the information in and be patient because – You know, look at the sheriff gets paper. He's going to get paperwork on that too.
Okay.
You know, these sheriffs, they don't know how to read warrants. They don't. Many of them don't know what makes a lawful warrant. You know?
Right.
They're not looking for a wet ink signature. I had my sheriff out here stuttering one day when him and his men came and acted on an unlawful warrant on somebody, and we kind of went after them for it. And every deputy and trooper that was on that property got a notice of tort, and they were all upset. And I said, well, you know, this is your fault because you took that thing from the court, and you should have questioned it. And he was like, I can't read those things. I said, well, if you can't read those things, then you don't belong to being sheriff, or at the very least you should do is find out somebody who can. Who knows,
well, the thing, too, is
the law.
They put me and my friend in jail for 4 months. Because there was this alleged restraining order that was put on my children, and they never told me about the restraining order. They just one day said, you have a restraining order, and then the next day when I visited my kids at their office, they handed it to me. But there was never a reason why they're giving me a restraining order. And their own civil harassment code or rule says that restraining orders cannot be placed on the parent or the child. And
yeah, well, they don't follow their own codes.
And they're trying to put another one on me. Rumor has it that there's another one on me placed on my son. But when I asked the guardian ad litem that they assigned to me, he says there isn't any warrant yet. He's going to get one, or he's going to get it soon. And I said, well, I've never even been served a service of summons to go to this hearing for this warrant. And he said, well, there is no warrant because you haven't been served yet. And I said, well, then why do I keep hearing that I have this warrant or this restraining order on me to prevent me from seeing my son? And my son's appointed attorney is telling people that I cannot contact my son. And she's threatening other people who have tried to contact my son that there's a restraining order on me. And I haven't seen it yet.
I can't get into that here now. I can't get into those particulars. You know, when you do your intake, you know, you're going to do an affidavit and put all that in, and somebody will call you.
I've already turned in the affidavit about a month ago.
Right, right. So those things will all be addressed. But the thing is don't give them any more ammunition to throw you in jail. The thing is each thing that they want you to do needs to be answered in the proper way.
Right, okay.
And look at what that habeas corpus, that should get you out of that court. And they'll default on it because they won't answer it because they'll have to admit they don't have jurisdiction.
Well, they've never answered anything I've sent them.
Well, that's the game they play. But you see, you have to know how to follow up, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Well,
it's a due process thing. And look, once it gets into the federal court, that's when they all go crazy, because what happened, look, they can control things in their own house. But when you get something on record in the federal court, that federal court and those federal judges aren't ready to stick their neck out for some rinky-dink county judge that
social worker, yeah,
people's rights. Why should he? What does he owe her? You know what I mean? Or him?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't owe him anything, and they're not going to do it. They just won't. I just, you know what I mean?
1 minute.
You know, unless you have the unlucky case where one judge has a relationship with the federal judge, which would be a conflict. Well, you don't run into that too much. But anyway, they can't answer the paperwork, and it's a whole due process thing. And that's your best bet at this point, because you're going to just get deeper and deeper. They're going to keep doing more things to you. When they realize that you have a method of pushing back,
I've also filed a counterclaim per Bill Thornton. I've been watching all his videos, and I filed a counterclaim 2 weeks ago, and they came back with me with wanting me to fill out a consent or decline the magistrate.
Yeah. Because they say you need the consent of the attorney general to sue the state. That's in their world. You know what I mean?
30 seconds.
Okay.
And that's a bunch of baloney. But look at that. That can be addressed also with the intake. Now, I don't.
Okay.
You know, it's not good to go against them if you don't understand the system. You know, their corporate system has a lot of stuff that we just don't give credibility to, and we don't answer. We hold our feet to the fire constitutionally. Anyway, I want to go to the next person. We only
okay.
got a few seconds left.
All right, thank you very much.
One more. Yeah, okay. Okay, you got Hamel Builders?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Got a few seconds. Go
no,
ahead.
No, my phone number is 720. I'm in Aurora, Colorado.
Don't worry about it. You're on now. So go ahead.
Okay. My name is John.
What's your name? What's your name and where are you from? Well, give me your first name and your state.
First name is John, J-O-N. There's no H. Yeah. And last name is Rourke. Colorado is my state.
Colorado. Okay. Okay, Colorado. John, what's up?
I'm a former deputy sheriff, investigator, and process server.
Okay.
So anything that Liberty Alliance has to serve papers on, I will do it, no charge.
Oh, well, good. You got to give us your information so we can contact you. You're a member?
Yes, I am. I sent my vow in, never heard from anybody about it. And I'll serve papers for Liberty.
You're from Colorado?
Correct.
Okay, you should.
Aurora, Colorado.
Aurora, Colorado. You should give Gary a call and tell him just what you said tonight. You're a former deputy and a process server, and you're willing to serve papers. That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and if it's Liberty Alliance, it'd be no charge, but if they wanted to contribute to some gas, that'd be nice.
That's
anybody else for their private information, I'll charge them.
Well, we appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Jen, can you give this gentleman Gary's phone number, Jen? Are you still here?
I sent him my vow and never
hold on
heard
a second.
Back.
I'll dig it up.
I'm sorry, you sent it what?
The vow.
You sent.
I don't
the
want
vow.
To be a grand, I don't want to be a grand jury administrator.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people have sent in the vows, and we do keep a record of the vows. We put them into a folder, but we haven't. I got to pass them over. We've got a secretary now, so once we catch up on other things, I'll pass all that paperwork over to the secretary, and then we'll see how we'll do that. Maybe we'll record. Well, we'll figure out what we're going to do. But we do record.
Anyway.
We do have all of the vows. We have to put them onto a spreadsheet and. And we have other things also people have sent in. But anyway.
And John, you said I could call you one
Jen,
time.
Jen's going to give you a phone number for Gary.
I've got a
couple of numbers. I don't know which one he'd want me to give him. So, but Jen knows. You got a pen?
Hold on. John, I called you. You said you gave me your phone number. and all I got was your voicemail and said not to leave a message because you get too many of them. And so I finally gave
well,
up.
I'm going to call Gary
yeah. now.
Okay.
Yeah,
my
message isn't my phone right now. If I'm not here or if I can't pick up, it rolls over to the secretary. So you should get a voice at this point for calling me. But call Gary; he's easier to get. What's Gary's number? Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, it's 248-980-6786. Let me repeat it. 248-980-6786.
Okay,
I
got
just give Gary a call.
240-980-6786. Now, one more thing. Reading the Colorado Constitution. I got it. But reading the Colorado Constitution, in the Constitution, they abolished the common law.
Yeah, well, you can't do that because you have look at that. That's baloney. If they do, it's null and void anyway. You can't abolish common law because the Constitution is common law and the Bill of Rights is common law. You know what I mean?
They abolished it in the Colorado State Constitution.
Marbury versus Madison. Anything repugnant to the Constitution of the United States of America is null and void, and the law of the land, Article 6. So it's null and void. It means nothing. We can overrule it.
Okay. Anyway, I'll call Gary and talk to him.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. If you want to take the last call here, you got one other person left. You only got seconds. I mean, we're way over. But go ahead.
Go ahead, Captain John.
Yeah, I'm the state coordinator with Illinois. Just a quick comment on Chris Ann Hall, Gary Will, our Region 7 co-coordinator, and I participated in Liberty Fest a couple of months back where Chris Ann was the guest speaker. She heard Gary Will speak of the NLA, and he and I both had conversations with her. She's aware of us.
Okay, that's good.
So that's all good. I got.
Appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, look at if she wants to get a hold of John and she has a subject that she would like us to broach, she should call, and we'd be more than willing to talk to her about how we would do that.
Well, I correspond with her, so I'll contact her and let her know.
There you go. You're the man. You know, look, out of all the people out there, I do know her, and I have used her stuff, and I feel more comfortable with her. I don't know if John knows her as well, but I've used her stuff, and she's very constitutional. So,
she's incredible. She's absolutely incredible.
She's very good. Well, you know, and Michael Bagnarek's incredible, too. The thing with Michael is I don't know that he understands the fiction. You know what I mean? We have a certain method that we've developed because we understand the fraud and the fiction. And not everybody out there understands it. Even Carl Miller had real good luck in court, but towards later years they started shutting him down because they've taught them how to get people to contract in and you know what I mean and sort of say the wrong thing and get into the wrong jurisdiction, and they feel comfortable with that, and they started beating people using his method because the people didn't understand that they were leaving the venue and they didn't completely slap the judge immediately. You see, they try one or two things, and if you don't slap them immediately, then they know you don't know what you're doing, and you don't understand the fiction, and that's how they steamroll you. And, I mean, it's all baloney. It's all fiction. But if you don't know that it's smoke and mirrors, it's like that nightmare. If you don't open your eyes and turn the light on, it keeps going, you know?
Her,
7 minutes over.
Okay. Her historic.
Well, listen, if you get a hold of her, we'd appreciate that. You know what I mean? If she's interested, let her get a hold of us. And,
she's easy to get a hold of.
All right, so we're gonna. You're it for now. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Good night. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, don't forget, Tuesday, tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have a one-hour course going for people who want to learn to become administrators and learn the processes that are connected with that. Also on Wednesday, special meeting, all leaders for National Liberty Alliance, again, right here in National Liberty Alliance, right here in our room here, same room as for Monday night meeting. And also don't forget the Lord's Day, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Meet the King. Good night. Thanks, everyone, for coming. God bless. Bye.
The years of